10 o'clock, and well, some of the dust has settled after yesterday's extraordinary events, and I think you'll allow me to suggest extraordinary 3 hours that we spent together. There were moments when I wondered whether we'd strayed into hyperbole, not least when it was suggested that Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor had become the first royal since Charles I to be held by the authorities. It's not often that we reference 1647 on this programme when we are looking for precedent, but it was to 1647 that we correctly turned. But this morning I think that we will responsibly and in a very adult fashion start looking forward rather than backwards and wondering what the facts as we currently know them are going to do to the royal family.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, police are set to continue searches at Royal Lodge, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's former home in Berkshire. Officers are looking into allegations that he shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein when he was Britain's trade envoy. Andrew has been released under investigation following his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has the latest from Windsor.
The former prince lived here for more than 20 years with his ex-wife Sarah Ferguson. He was in the process of moving to Sandringham, but officers are back here today to see if they can find anything else that will help with their investigation.
The former prince spent 11 hours in custody on his 66th birthday yesterday. The last senior member of the royal family to be arrested was Charles I in 1647. President Trump gave his reaction to Andrew's arrest while on Air Force One.
It's a very sad thing. When I see that, it's a very sad thing. To see it and to see what's going on with his brother, who's obviously coming to our country very soon, and he's a fantastic man, the king. So I think it's a very sad thing. It's really interesting because nobody used to speak about Epstein when he was alive, but now they speak. But I'm the one that can talk about it because I've been totally exonerated. I did nothing.
Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has previously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Epstein. He's not responded to LBC's requests for comment on the specific allegations connected to the release of the latest Epstein files in January. The Foreign Secretary is due to meet her US counterpart in Washington later after President Trump threw the UK's Chagos Islands deal into doubt. It's reported that Donald Trump changed his mind on it following a row over the use of British air bases for possible strikes in Iran. On Wednesday, the US President described the deal as a big mistake, despite previously backing it. And the government has announced plans to use drones to track illegal waste dumps in England. A so-called drone squad will use laser technology to pinpoint where waste has been dumped, which could later be used as evidence in court. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 55 at 10,680. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, a dry but cloudy end to the morning for most, some bright spells and showers developing later, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Another day, another headline. Reporters talk about green shoots or what AI will bring us. The naysayers will see bubbles, not booms, or maybe for once, there's nothing new to report. Whatever is announced next, we're here to help guide you through the noise. We've helped Britain invest through 45 years of change. That's why we're the UK's number one investment and savings platform, trusted by 2 million people. Hargreaves Lansdowne, helping Britain invest for it all. Investment returns vary. For claim verification, visit hl.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Thank you and good morning. 3 minutes after 10 is the time. We may have a little look later in the programme at some of the flaws in Donald Trump's claim a moment ago, as you heard in the news bulletin, that he has somehow been totally exonerated by the contents of the Epstein files. But remember, as things stand, only two people have been convicted of any crimes as a consequence of those documents. One is dead and the other is Ghislaine Maxwell. Nonetheless, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor yesterday became the first royal to be arrested, or the first royal to be held, if we're going to be technically and linguistically correct. The first since Charles I in 1647. And the question that we ask is, necessarily cognizant of the law. I'm not going to patronise you, but you need to be sensible and you need to be responsible. I'm kind of talking to myself at the moment as much as I'm talking to you. So there's no speculation whatsoever on guilt or innocence or on any of those matters that could potentially compromise future court cases. The arrest, of course, was over misconduct, alleged misconduct in public office. It has nothing to do with the rather more prominent contents of the Epstein files. But I actually want to do more or less what I was preparing to do yesterday before we were rather overtaken by events. And I want to contemplate ramifications. It was on Question Time last night on the BBC that I first heard the question posed about whether the royal family can actually survive this scandal. And you know, scandal is itself a negotiable word, isn't it? Because if there is no further action, then can you actually describe the arrest of somebody who is not convicted of any crimes, or even at this point potentially charged with any crimes, as a scandal? I don't know. But I think in journalese, at least, the word is entirely appropriate, entirely normal. And that's what I want to talk about. So King Charles was applauded yesterday when he arrived at London Fashion Week. Make of that what you will. But simultaneously, as I think Nick mentioned to you earlier, he has also found himself heckled during public appearances. Heckled, I have to tell you, I spoke to a journalist who'd been present at one of these events, and heckled by an individual or two, and they were greeted by sighs of impatience by everybody else present. So most people turning up for a royal visit are there to express enthusiasm and, let's be honest, a little bit of deference as well. But equally, you may have Republicans who are protesting, or you may have people moved to protest by recent events. They are, however, always in the minority. Nobody wants to be heckled when they turn up to cut a ribbon, but I guess the more prominent you are, the more likely the heckling becomes. And the royal family has suffered various crises over the years. If I give you an indication of what I'm talking about, you only need to open one or two newspapers this morning to see memories of the abdication crisis being cited. The royals survived the abdication, but this crisis is worse, contends a royal writer in the Times newspaper. I was chatting to a lovely bloke last night who was in quite a senior position at LBC on the night that Diana Princess of Wales died in a tunnel in Paris, and we kind of compared notes about how we dealt with those moments in the context of being involved in producing live radio. And that became a crisis in the aftermath of unparalleled proportion, largely as a consequence of the royal family failing really to recognise the public mood and responding to the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, in a way that many considered to be at best inappropriate or inadequate, and at worst downright callous, culminating, under many readings of events, in Prince Harry and his brother being compelled, and I mention Harry first there, because he was so visibly young, being compelled to walk behind their mother's coffin in front of the eyes of the entire world, which was largely construed as an attempt to repair some of the public relations damage that had been done by the grown-ups, that had been done by his father and grandparents in the aftermath of his mother's death. I often think of Harry when I'm reflecting upon how vile British newspapers are, and the fact that they have and can successfully turn the British public against someone so obviously deserving of both support and admiration. It's not a very flattering picture of the British public, is it? But the effort put into, for various reasons, all of them pretty unpleasant, turning the British public against that little boy, who went off, of course, to serve Queen and country in potentially fatal circumstances in Afghanistan. And if you ever doubt the power that British journalism has to destroy the reputations of good people or to malign the reputations of decent men and women, then just have a little look at the Duke of Sussex. Until relatively recently, he would appear in newspaper articles as part of a set of problems that also contained his uncle, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. And even at the time, I found myself thinking that this is beyond bonkers. How on earth mean, someone who, for many members of the UK establishment's greatest offence was simply to fall in love with a woman of colour. How on earth you can put him on the same page as somebody who retained contact with a convicted paedophile long after the paedophile was convicted and misled pretty much anyone who asked about it for years subsequently. It's extraordinary, isn't it? But listen, the royal family is, whether you like it or not, an absolutely integral part of our society. I think we sometimes underestimate how integral and intrinsic it is. And by that, I simply mean that the forelock tugging and the cap doffing and the deference that is endemic to our society has its roots in monarchy. If you have a caste system in a country, if you have a hierarchy of humanity, if you have a pyramid of population, then whatever sits at the pinnacle of that pyramid in many ways defines everything that follows. I remember when I first became a father, and like almost every family in the world, my daughter sort of fell in love with Disney princesses. And I remember reflecting, not in front of them, that would have been weird, but just quietly thinking how odd it is that we still revere a princess. We still give our little girls something to aspire to that is impossible or entirely unachievable, unless, they marry a prince, which is also a ridiculous example of a human hierarchy that makes no sense whatsoever and exists only to entrench and perpetuate inequality and unearned wealth. So the royal family is baked into our way of life in ways that we often don't even see because it is so normal to us and so commonplace. And individual members of it have brought the institution, or the firm, as they like to call it, into times of jeopardy, the abdication crisis being historically probably the biggest. There was genuine concern at the time that the royal family may not survive the events of 1936, but they did. There was talk when Diana, Princess of Wales, died that the royal family's response would hold the institution below the waterline, that it would just do damage, that although the full impact would not be immediate, it would be a slow burn, if you like, and subsequently they would not survive in their current form. And those predictions turned out to be somewhat exaggerated as well. But now we find ourselves in entirely uncharted waters. Yesterday's programme explored in some detail the difficulties of defining misconduct in public office. All I'm going to tell you for the purposes of today's conversation is that you just err on the side of caution when you ring in and focus on the future, not on the past, because the facts as we know them are these. Okay? Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has been arrested and released over allegations of misconduct in public office. And it is an event of such unprecedented import that you have to travel back to 1647 to find anything even comparable. So questions of guilt and innocence are not for us to contemplate today. What we contemplate is the size of this story and the potential damage that it does to the institution of monarchy, or, if you prefer, to the royal family itself. That was the question that they asked on Question Time last night. Can the royal family survive this crisis? And that, I think, is the question I'm going to ask you. And we have room for a little more nuance than the average contributor to Question Time, because our programme is 3 hours long. Although I doubt we'll confine ourselves to this conversation for the entire 3 hours today. That's always entirely up to you. Not really up to whether or not you ring me, but it's entirely based upon how interesting the calls that we receive are. Quality, not quantity, as I often intone. But not just can it survive, but also the more nuanced question of how much damage does it do to the head of the family, to the heir to the throne, to the whole shebang, as it were, to the whole firm, to the whole organisation. It's a really weird question to contemplate, because we don't know how baked into our society the royal family is. Most of us don't think about them very often, except at times of pomp and circumstance or passing away. And pomp and circumstance includes marriages and christenings. But as I said, any pyramid of population is defined by what sits at the pinnacle. The royal family defines British society. Some of the things that make no sense, the remnants of medievalism and feudalism that continue to stymie, for example, social mobility or aspiration, are all traceable back to the royal family, to the times, in fact, of the Doomsday Book. So the question of it being an option as opposed to a simple permanent piece of constitutional furniture is one that we very rarely contemplate. Phone-ins about whether or not we should abolish the monarchy never really land because they don't address movement. There's no moving parts in that conversation. It's built upon what you think about monarchies. But monarchies fall because of events, not because of opinions. Monarchies fall because of movements among the population and responses to things that have actually happened. Monarchies don't fall as a consequence of philosophical debates or intellectual salons in which the rightness or the wrongness of an institution is discussed. They fall because they run out of relevance or they run out of road. And I wonder, in that context, what you think this story, this scandal, which is the right word to use, what you think this scandal is doing and will do to the British royal family. And that's the question that I want you to answer. The number you need is 0345 6060973. This is, I think, the first opportunity for you to have your say on this subject on LBC since the story broke in such extraordinary circumstances at roughly this time yesterday. So do take that opportunity, won't you? But focus on this question. How much damage, if any, will this scandal do, is this scandal doing, to the royal family? 0345 6060973. And if you want to go a little bit tabloid, as the BBC did last night, do you think that the monarchy can survive this scandal? Have a little think and give me a ring. 0345 6060973. And if you're really quick, you could go first.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins, with vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at Vitabiotics.com. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
And if you could indulge me for a moment, I know I do this a lot, and I know it increasingly makes me sound like a sort of strict school teacher, but if you're... Can I do this already? Phone lines aren't even full yet, and I'm about to tell you not to ring in. But I don't... Look, imagine if we did a phone in a month ago, and it was, should we abolish the monarchy? Don't ring me now to say what you would have said to me then. I do want to examine, if we can, the impact of the most recent events. The salience, if you like, of this scandal and the question of whether or not you think it could, would or should damage or destroy the entire royal family. Because, as I say, there's no earthly way you can paint it as anything other than momentous. Even with all of the legal caveats, it is to 1647 that you must return to find another example of a senior member of the ruling family being held in custody by the forces of law and order. 10:19 is the time. On we go. Amit is in Harrow. Amit, what do you reckon?
Hi, James.
Hello.
First time caller.
Well, you've picked a moment. You've picked a moment of constitutional significance, Amit. Well done.
Thank you. Do you know what? I've formed some opinions on the topic, and I thought, why not go for it instead of sitting on the sidelines?
Yeah.
But I think that the royal family shouldn't be affected by this. I think that crises have happened before, and I don't think the actions by individuals, whatever they may be, I think in this case misconduct officers has been accused of,
yes,
should affect top-ranking officials. I think everyone has their opinion on the royal family. I am in no doubt that this will lead to further repercussions, especially maybe from the Republicans. I do think the royal family's soft power can bring a lot to this country, as evidenced by what's happened with Donald Trump over the last few years. Keir Starmer pulling out that magic envelope in the White House.
Do you reckon? Because I agreed with you at the time, but he's just done another U-turn on the Chagos Islands. I'm not quite sure what we have got from that that soft power. With a normal American president, maybe it would play more of a part, but if sending the king or if deploying the king to tickle the toes of the Mango Mussolini doesn't actually result in any measurable benefits for the UK, then you could argue that that's the opposite of an argument in favour of soft power. That's almost a demonstration of the fact that it doesn't work like that anymore. And remember, he was made a trade envoy, presumably because people were buying into that notion of soft power. And that hasn't ended well.
I think if we turn it a little bit, I think what this should do is put a bigger spotlight on the royal family. They should all understand from the top down they're not above the law, and this misuse of power that should put more of a highlight on this. I think there's been a lot of cases within the royal family over the last number of decades where their power's not been checked, and even when it's been checked, it's been lightly pushed under the covers. I think also we've seen in public office a number of cases, especially in the last 5-6 years of COVID, about individuals in the Conservative government who misused their power publicly, but they're still living a great life, even if they're not in the front.
So you're talking about a perception that the ruling class, and of course, as I will remind you on countless occasions in the course of this morning's broadcast, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has denied all wrongdoing previously, although he hasn't responded to our request for comment on these specific allegations. You're describing a sense, and this is really interesting to me, of the ruling classes, and, you know, that's not a political observation because they're just as likely to be left-wing politicians as they are right-wing politicians, but you mentioned recent Tory leaders who perhaps more obviously lend themselves to your analysis. The ruling class is being held to lower account, morally, let alone legally, than the rest of us would expect to be.
Yeah. I think if lots of us are in jobs, especially in the private sector, and someone conducted similar acts, they would have been fired for it. They would have probably been able to get another job for a long time. It would have really affected their lives and livelihoods. We see commonly now these sorts of things happening within our ruling class. But even if maybe they lose their job or whatever, that nothing's impacting their lives behind. And I think that even morally, but also within the rule of law, no one should be above the law or should be led to believe they should be above the law.
This is where, I don't know if you heard me chuckling a moment ago, because I was desperately trying not to interrupt you again, having interrupted you a little prematurely before you'd barely drawn breath. But the king is above the law.
Fine, maybe the king is, but...
Well, you can't just gloss over, because everybody keeps saying nobody is above the law. I think the king might have said nobody is above the law, but the king bloody is. He is literally above the law. You can't arrest him. If, God forbid, there'd been some terrible skiing accident in Courchevel 40 years ago, Andrew Windsor would currently be king, and he would be above the law.
But Andrew Windsor is not king.
But the king is above the law, so you can't keep saying nobody is above the law.
No. I understand the kink is above the law, but what I would like to see from this is that...
That's the point.
Even people like the king should know that there might be an amendment somewhere or something like that.
No, but that's the point, isn't it? That's what we've stumbled into together. The absolute crux of this entire moment is that it reminds us that the king is above the law. And in many ways, the whole essence of monarchy, which has its roots in the divine right of kings, the idea that they're anointed or appointed by God, so palpably ridiculous. But the legacy of that is that today you, Amit and Harrow, are wrong when you say nobody is above the law. And if this story, short of the king himself being on the hook for alleged criminality, this is as close as you get to the proof of that particular pudding, that actually some people are above the law.
I understand that, but that's completely fair. But
I think that might prove to be the most interesting. And if you're looking at the fractures that are appearing in the edifice of monarchy this morning, this might yet prove to become, because it isn't yet, but it might become the biggest of those fractures.
Yeah, but I just think also, agree with your point, but I think also it would be a shame for an individual who is not above the law.
Yeah.
Not being the king to affect other members, even though they may, and there's no evidence to suggest that they're connected in any way. It's not to say whether I'm for or against the monarchy. No. I don't want to keep that to the side. I just think it's sad, whatever people think of the monarchy, that one individual who is not above the law was able to stay out of it for a long time. I'm not going to talk about any allegations.
No, you're being incredibly... I mean, in fact, you're being an example to all future callers. Be more Amit could be a catchphrase I deploy a little later in the programme if people start sailing a little bit too close to the wind. So, because you have been neither for nor against the monarchy itself. You've been extremely cognizant of the denials that remain in place, the absence of any charges. And, of course, the difference between being arrested for alleged offences and merely being related to somebody arrested for alleged offences. They are different things. And you've resisted also the temptation that I must also resist to speculate on some of the known unknowns, like who knew what and when, because those factors will come into play as the days and weeks pass, particularly in reference to the question of how much damage is going to be done to the whole royal family, who knew what and when. But that original point, which I know we did talk about it a bit yesterday, but if you were going to get really intellectual about it and talk about the essence of monarchy itself, not just our royal family, and having its roots in the divine right of kings, having its roots in the idea that monarchs are appointed and anointed by God, the legacy of that in 2026, in an essentially secular society, an essentially godless society, the legacy of that is that the king is not subject to the laws of man in the way that the rest of us are. And you're not going to get a starker reminder of that than this story, I don't think. Amit, thank you. Roger is in Harlow. Roger, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Good morning. Well done.
What have I done now?
Listening to you. No, listen, just keep going. I've been listening to you for the last God knows how many years, and you're getting better.
Is that possible?
Yes. I don't like your teasers, by the way. Sometimes when you have those teasers where you say you're going to come back and tell us something and you don't.
Well, I've got to leave some room for improvement, haven't I, Roger? That's the point.
Of course,
that's
of course.
The point. Thank
Listen,
you. That's a lovely
Your question this yes. morning was, can the monarchy survive this? And I said to your researcher, yes, they can. There's evidence out there that they've done this before, but we've forgotten it. And it's simply this. You're old enough to remember. Do you remember when Diana died?
Of course.
When Diana died, this country actually went into mourning without asking it. A lot of people that didn't even like the monarchy came forward.
For people who weren't around, it's almost impossible to convey what happened to the whole country.
Oh, my God. I mean, I know people that are the anti-royal were actually out there grieving because they knew what happened to that woman and how she was treated. But they survived it simply by reinventing. And actually, the press has got a lot to do with this. If you think about how Parker Bowles, how she was seen.
Yes.
She was hated in this country by people.
Again,
if you had suggested...
You're absolutely right.
If you suggested then, oh, don't worry, in a few years' time, she'll get married to Charles and she would become queen, you'd be laughed at. Thought people would say, no, you're talking rubbish.
Yes.
It's impossible. But they managed to pull it off. And they pulled it off by reinventing her, giving her a smiley face, because she'd always looked bloody miserable, but giving her a smiley face and a title.
Yeah,
and even the Queen said, the Queen took her in, but the Queen said, yes, but Charles, she's not to be Queen. But Charles still did it anyway. So what I'm saying is that as it stands at the moment, they could survive, but it would take a while to reinvent themselves. They've got to ditch Andy Boy, definitely.
Well, that's already happened.
Real problem is that it's what you said the other day, and I remembered it. It's a weight of opinion.
Yes.
It's not even the facts. If the weight of opinion is against you, you might not have even done anything wrong. It doesn't matter. The weight of opinion. And look at yesterday. When it came out, my wife rang me, and she said, she rang me, she's on holiday in Brighton, and I ring her to see if she's okay. And
she's on holiday in Brighton? It's been raining more in the last week than it has for about 200 years.
She loves Brighton, I can't help it.
All right, carry on.
I rang her up and said, listen, I'm worried.
Yeah.
And she said, what are you worried about? I said, I'm worried about Andy. And she started to laugh because she knows I'm not. And then she rang me back today. He's sweating now. And I'm telling you now, right around this country, people are looking at that headline, he's sweating now,
yes,
and laughing. And there's all these people coming forward, I knew Andy, he was horrible. And what you're witnessing is people having the opportunity for the first time to say how much they dislike this man. Not the royal family.
That's interesting.
This man.
And that's the heart of it, isn't it? Because it is all about how much distance can be placed between the man accused and denying these allegations and the family of which, until recently, he was an extremely senior part. I think, technically, he's still eighth in line to the throne, isn't he? Eighth in line to the throne!
Your radio station yesterday, I think, it was definitely... I only listened to LBC, anyway.
Quite right,
I listened to somebody saying...
No wonder you sound so clever.
I heard somebody saying they were at an event, and the Queen came out, and Charles came out, and the royal family came out. The only person that didn't come out was Andy, and he was in the background, and they could hear him in the background shouting and screaming at some servant or whatever. And he was incredible. It was embarrassing, but everyone said,
there's two things there that have popped up in the first two calls that are absolutely intrinsic to the bigger questions of what the long-term impacts of this are likely to be. The first is that extraordinary reminder that the British monarch can't be arrested or be the subject of civil and criminal proceedings, which makes him essentially, if exempt from the law, albeit that, Charles I was put to death and essentially prosecuted by Parliament, the civil war and all the rest of it. As it stands, the civil and criminal law does not apply to the king in the way that it applies to you and me, Roger, and everybody else listening to this programme. So point one is that it's a reminder of the absurdity of at least one element of monarchy and the obscene unfairness of it. And point two is that an awful lot is going to hinge upon how much clear blue water can be established between Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and most obviously his older brother, King Charles, but also the institution of monarchy and the royal family as a sort of an intellectual entity, as a philosophical idea. And you're right, at the moment it would appear that all of the ordure that is being heaped upon Andrew is not reaching the rest of the family on a scale that they might have feared or even perhaps expected. That, of course, could change. And equally, you might think that the analysis of Roger and myself is wrong and that the stench is spreading up the family tree much faster and much further than we have currently acknowledged. Thank you, Roger. Two brilliant calls there. A quick word on why they were brilliant, because I haven't had a phone call off the lawyers yet, which proves it's quite easy to do this, as I knew it would be, as I've reassured colleagues that it would be. We are capable of conducting this conversation in a way that doesn't even come close to jeopardising anything or flirting with broadcast or legal requirements. So thank you and well done. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Unmarked police vehicles have been seen arriving at Royal Lodge, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's former home in Berkshire. Officers are looking into allegations that he shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein when he was Britain's trade envoy. Andrew has been released under investigation following his arrest yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Mr. Mountbatten Windsor has previously strenuously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Epstein. The Foreign Secretary is due to meet her US counterpart in Washington after President Trump threw the UK's Chagos Islands deal into doubt. It's reported Donald Trump changed his mind about it earlier this week following a row over the use of British air bases for possible strikes in Iran. And official figures show retail sales grew more than expected in January. They were up 1.8% compared with the rise of 0.4% in December. LBC weather, a dry but cloudy start for many. Some bright spells and showers later, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So three things on my list. I don't know if you're making a list this morning of interesting elements to the conversation that we're having. The first is that reminder that came through loud and clear during Amit's call that the British monarch can't be arrested or be the subject of civil and criminal proceedings. And until, of course, as the memory of Charles I reminds us, and until he is. But as it stands, that is the letter of the law. The second bit is the history of scandal, if you like, or the history of scandal overcome. And Roger was absolutely right, you know. You'd have to be of a certain age to fully remember just how much jeopardy the whole family seemed to be in at the time of Diana, Princess of Wales's death, and during the really unseemly years of unprecedented press intrusion into King Charles, now King Charles, then Prince Charles's private life, up to and including publication of I've been in the days of phone hacking, of course. This sounds a bit odd, but before phone hacking existed, I think someone was using a shortwave radio and ended up accidentally stumbling over a conversation that Charles was having with his then-mistress, Camilla Parker Bowles, in which he expressed a desire to return to Earth in a sort of bizarre form of reincarnation as a sanitary product. I mean, to be honest with you, if you're going now to your radio... What? What's happened to James? What's he talking about? That's an indication of the deal that Prince Harry often explains is done between the rest of his family and the media. Because imagine if... The things that have dogged the king were to be returned to and regurgitated and poured over in the way that much smaller transgressions are if they're committed by celebrities that the Daily Mail doesn't like or by a left-wing politician. So some of the stuff that Charles was on the hook for, nothing illegal, obviously, but immoral if you subscribe to such codes and deeply weird and sleazy. He has been allowed to move on from that. He has been allowed almost to shed that period of his life. And the only people that allow you to do that are the members of my profession. It is the media that makes these decisions. The same with Camilla Parker Bowles, who was the sort of wicked stepmother of folklore in the context of the royal family and portrayed as such and believed to be so by the public. And they went on an epic program of rehabilitation, public and reputational rehabilitation. And that was why Roger's call was so powerful. He reminded us that it really, really worked. It really worked. You know, it's not as if any of them ever drank a mojito on a train, but could you imagine how the right-wing media would be treating the royal family if they didn't like them and didn't need them for their own business model? This is the thing that Harry, among so many other things, he explains it so perfectly and so poignantly, given his personal involvement in the process, that it's no wonder that they are also desperate to malign him and turn the British public against him. He really, really gets it. Thank you to Anthony for reminding me of the mojito on a train, which, if you didn't follow, was the thing that they tried to hang Diane Abbott for. When looking the other way, if someone sufficiently posh or sufficiently right-wing does something measurably and demonstrably worse. Which brings us back to Amit's call and the references to the likes of Boris Johnson getting away with heinous and egregious conduct. Why? I don't know. Is it poshness or politics? But, and then point three, regardless of the allegations against him that he, of course, continues to deny, Andrew Windsor was clearly and is clearly a massive whopper. The worst story I've seen today, and I thought I'd heard them all, involved him being thrown on a dung heap by grooms at Buckingham Palace when he was 5 years old because he kept poking the horses with a stick and enjoying their unhappy reaction. Everyone can picture a child like that in their mind, whether you're getting it from a Roald Dahl novel or from your own memories. But the cue of people with stories about how arrogant, how entitled, and how obnoxious he is as a man... would reach from here to the moon. And of course, none of that prevented him from enjoying the trappings of privilege, the trappings of royalty, and these ludicrous advancements up to and including being made a trade envoy, despite that being a job for which he had less than zero qualifications. So again, the absurdity of monarchy, as viewed through the lens of Andrew as a human being, let alone as the subject yesterday of an arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office, could reach further than the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, the revelations regarding Charles's affairs, the abdication crisis of 1936, which quite a few newspapers have picked up on today. 10:42 is the time. Tim is in Belfast. Tim, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think the success of the monarchy in the United Kingdom relies on the population having maybe a subconscious belief in the magical mystique,
yes,
of the monarchy, that they actually succeed. People will go and stand for hours just to look at them.
It's
That's all they do.
This
they
is in 2026, not in 1066. It's insane, right?
Yeah. And they just and to be in their presence and to have any sort of connection with them is seen to be somehow adding to your own mystique.
Yeah.
And I think that started in recent events with the removal of the title. It was almost as if a title was an inherent part of the person.
Yes.
That they were born to this and the title was part of them, an integral part of their existence. And the removal of the title suddenly was a step in the direction of saying, you know what, he's just an ordinary human being, because I've taken away that magical mystique. And I think the arrest yesterday was another thing that will bring them, it will damage that mystique and will damage this belief that the population have that there are somehow or other special, because the evidence on some of the things you've mentioned that happened previously is that they're not special. And that is, it, once you start to damage something like that, it's like a small hole that starts to spread out. And people will start to maybe realize, you know what? What is this all about? Why do we think they're so special? Why do we think they're magical? Because they have the titles, because they have the carriages, because they have the wealth. And what do they actually do to deserve that speciality? It's not even the same as sort of meeting David Beckham, who's done something to get where he is.
Indeed he has. I was on stage with Gary Lineker last night, just to name drop, and you're absolutely right. The difference between people who have achieved a lot and people who haven't is never going to be starker than it is when you're comparing a sporting hero or a military hero to, well, hang on, I was about to say to a member of the royal family, but of course when the Daily Mail get their claws out, you can be a military hero and turned into public enemy number one if you happen to be Prince Harry. Do you know that you probably do know this, Tim, because you're a very intelligent man. Do you know that you are channeling Walter Badgett at the moment, the 19th century constitutional expert?
Of course I knew that.
Because he, I think, coined the phrase that the monarchy can't let the light in. And yep. That's what you've just described. This lets the light in. It reminds us that they're flesh and blood, that their blood, for example, is not blue. It's red like ours, and they are not spiritually different or intrinsically different. The only thing I'd point out is that all of the princes, this is a beautiful phone in because all of the calls are folding into each other. All of the other previous scandals reminded us of the things that this scandal reminds us of, and they were overcome.
Yeah, I think the removal of the title is probably as important as anything.
Because you can be de-princed. No one knew you could be de-royaled.
Yes. And I think that it's a recognition that, you know, these titles are flimsy. They exist only because of being inherited. There's somebody can decide whether you have one or not.
Yeah. Well, it's the opposite of a divine right, isn't it? Opposite of a divine right. It's a human bestow. What's the noun for a bestow? It's bestowed by, is there a noun for a bestow? A bestowal? Is that the word? A bestowal? Come on, Tim, you're the genius.
Not on that one.
A human bestowal. It's a gift. It's in the gift of humanity. It's in the gift of human beings, not in the gift of God, which is what the divine right of kings tries to perpetrate. And that, that removal of the title, regardless of yesterday's events, although of course they are intrinsically linked, really lets the light in and explains why it was an incremental process. It was as if they knew the accuracy of what you're describing, and that is why they the original announcement, people have probably forgotten this, it was only months ago, but they tried to do as much and as little as possible, and it didn't wash. The sense became pretty irresistible pretty quickly that they would have to go further, because he was still... He lost the dukedom, but he stayed a prince, was it? Because I forget which way round it was, but it didn't all happen in one go. They nibbled away at it until there was nothing left. And that suggests they recognise the significance of what you've described. They're letting the light in. He is letting the light in on the whole family. Ooh. Thank you, Tim. Badgett, by the way, if you are remotely interested in our unwritten constitution, then it is he should be one of your go-to commentators. And monarchy should not let the light in. He used the word magic as well, I think, of the institution. Transparency will destroy the appeal. It evolves into one of the alleged catchphrases of the late Queen, Elizabeth II. Never complain, never explain. And it also, of course, gets applied to their finances as well. The more we find out about their private wealth, the harder it becomes to justify elements of the monarchy's continuing existence. 10:47 is the time. So far, well, it's not quite 52:48, but there is a real possibility, not a consensus, but an informed view that this could prove to be an existential threat to the royal family itself, but also that it doesn't quite feel that yet. Why not add your thoughts to the mix? 0345 6060973 is the number you need.
This is LBC. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Creatives. It's time to get prepped for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:51. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Well, the question is quite good, but the answers so far have been quite brilliant. What is the long-term impact, potentially, of the scandal in which Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is embroiled, and to varying degrees, it could be argued, has embroiled. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has embroiled his entire family. Questions that we can't answer today. Who knew what and when? That is going to become incredibly relevant to some of the broader questions that we are asking today. And could more have been done sooner with regard to, how would you describe it? Damage limitation, or indeed the doing what they have done subsequently. The last week that the King and... there's a little bit to me, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool Republican by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think I'm ever going to get a knighthood. I think that ship has probably sailed, but I don't hold any individual members of the royal family who retain their titles in particular contempt for the accident of birth that propelled them to their position in society. I mean, if you don't find that accident of birth ridiculous, then sadly you have been infected by the ridiculousness. One of the strangest calls I ever took was from a bloke who'd served in the Navy. I was on air on the morning that the death of Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, was announced. And I took a call from someone who'd served with him in the Navy. And halfway through the call, I know what you're thinking, I interrupt everyone anyway, but halfway through the call, I don't know why, I just found myself saying something like, and I can't remember the exact detail, but I did find myself saying something like, you think he's a better human being than you? Don't you? That's the way he was talking about it. There was what do you want to call it? An air of mystique or magic. As Roger reminded us, people will queue in the rain. They'll stand in the rain for hours for a glimpse of someone through a car window who has done nothing in their life except be born with the biggest silver spoon in history. So I find the concept and the institution, the more I think about it, and I don't think about it that much, absolutely absurd. And socially dangerous. I think the fact that we still teach little girls that princess is the pinnacle of female achievement, even though it's an impossible goal for 99.99999999 recurring of them, and of course the only way it can be achieved is either by an accident of birth or a marriage to the beneficiary of an accident of birth. So I think it's socially dangerous. The inequality in our country, the entrenched power of inheritance, whether it's wealth, status or power, is absurd because it means that brilliantly gifted people live their lives with a boot on their head, never able to rise to the levels that they would achieve in a genuine meritocracy, and the previous scandals that have been overcome. So I think this question is going to be interesting for months, if not years, to come. And this, of course, is the first opportunity we've had to ask it since Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was arrested yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. I'd remind you once again, he denies all wrongdoing and has not responded to LBC's requests for comment on the specific allegations connected to the release of the latest Epstein files in January. Richard is in Upminster. Richard, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hi, James. Yes, I wanted to focus on the what should we do next and what should come next. And
yes.
Because it is very tempting to talk about history, but having said that, I want to tell you that in 1946, the Japanese emperor told us that he was no longer related to the sun god Amaretsu, and that he was a human being, and that led to the sort of the occupation of Japan. So there's a kind of precedent there, but really, if you look at the Magna Carta, it does actually say that the king is not above the law, but somehow we've brought in sovereign immunity to sort of tweak that. So I agree with you on that point, but I think this is an opportunity for this monarchy, and I'll just call it the monarchy rather than an individual.
Yes, of course.
To adapt, because if you look at, let's just take evolution. It's not about being fit; it's about how good you are at adapting. And that the royal family is good at adapting. I think now's their chance to evolve. And I think, you know, we give them the power, and we've been given so much agency. All of us as individuals have so much agency. We don't know what to do with it, so we're kind of flustering around and we're looking for, is it politicians, is it the monarchy, is it somebody? Yeah. Well, actually, we need to sort of take on this collective agency ourselves and realise that we have more power than we have. So,
well, this is the point I was just trying to make. I'm not sure that a population can do that when it exists under the rule of a monarchy. I actually think it infantilises a population. Yes.
And I think that's for me, without going into too much detail, I'm half Irish. I have a sort of view on this subject about
yes,
the whole empire. And I think we sort of have a very toxic love of a toxic nostalgia for this British empire. And we still think like that. So,
well, yeah, sorry. I'm interrupting too much today.
Carry on. And so I think we want to be empowered. So let's, you know, how can we get our collective agency together? And I think going to Charles, leadership for me is about, obviously about yourself, but it's about empowering other people to be leaders and step up, right? So let's get into the nitty-gritty. We can talk about social contracts and democracy in the future, but I think it's time for Charles to say, as a leader, I have overseen the creation of this current system that has failed, and I am now going to step down, and I'm going to hand over to Harry and William. Let's give them a job share, okay?
Okay, now you're moving into the realms of the impossible. I'm still intrigued by what you're saying.
Exactly, yes. So let's say Charles should step down and hand
over. Why should he step down?
Because in a sense, he's got to take responsibility as a leader. I can quote you, people in the military have stepped down because of soldiers' activity where they didn't even know the person.
So he is the commanding officer, so
he's
to speak, and his brother is in the ranks, and therefore the buck stops with him.
Yes, and we love accountability, don't we? So I think...
Well, this was the point Amit made an hour ago, is actually, as a nation, we've proved in the last few years, we bloody hate accountability if we are...
Yes, we're not good at it.
In thrall to a Boris Johnson-type figure, or indeed a Donald Trump.
And we love everyone else to be held accountable, but not ourselves. So I think it's time, we don't need to be ruled over, we need to be empowered. And I think that, for me, is... That means we have a responsibility to step up. So that means we need to look
at... We'd still have a monarchy.
I think we still have the monarchy, and so you're kind of shifting a little bit more towards the Swedish model, aren't you? So,
I don't know what the average Swede feels about that, but they certainly don't seem to be imbued with any sense of mystique compared to our royal family. I don't know that it would necessarily constitute pure transparency or accountability for a father to pass on an entirely unearned privilege to, under the auspices still of the divine right of kings to a son. I mean, why can't I have a go? If we're going to be talking about agency, why can't Keith? Keith would be a great king. It also benefits from the alliteration that we're all so fond of. It's a shame there are no monarchs whose name begins with K. That would just be fun. A King Keith or a King Kevin or a King Kieran, all of those things. Or a Queen Kit. Oh, no, no names begin with Q. Any names begin with Q? I can't think of it. But I take your point, but I think you, and accidentally and unintentionally, highlight the impossibility of doing things measurably differently. Even with the Scandinavian example or other monarchies that don't seem to be as closely connected to medievalism and feudalism as ours still does. And I think, oddly, I to swing back the other way, that when William becomes king, as is likely, of course, the plan you describe is going to be in part enacted. I think everybody knows that he is committed to a much smaller royal family, a fewer working royals, a slimmed down monarchy. Whether or not that makes any difference, I don't know. Whether or not that becomes a postponement of imminent doom, I don't know. Because it does two things that we've touched on today, doesn't it? It kind of lets the magic in. You can de-prince someone, you can certainly demote someone else from your family, at which point the question of why does this family enjoy the enormous privilege and wealth that it enjoys. Why? Why does it enjoy it at all? And the more people that start asking that question, the more trouble they're in.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, unmarked police vehicles have been seen arriving at Royal Lodge, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's former home in Windsor. Andrew has been released under investigation following his arrest yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Officers are looking into allegations that he shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein when he was Britain's trade envoy. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details from Windsor.
Teams are continuing their work here at Andrew's former home of more than 20 years. Uniformed officers will have been here overnight holding the fort as teams work their way through the 30-bed mansion, looking for computers, hard drives, anything that can help with their investigation.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has previously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Epstein. He's not responded to LBC's requests for comment on the specific allegations connected to the release of the latest Epstein files in January. The Foreign Secretary is due to meet her US counterpart in Washington later after President Trump threw the UK's Chagos Islands deal into doubt. It's reported that Donald Trump has changed his mind on it following a row over the use of British air bases for possible strikes in Iran. On Wednesday, the US president described the Chagos Islands deal as a big mistake, despite previously backing it. Former UK ambassador to the UN, Sir Mark Lyle Grant, told LBC, it could be the start of another diplomatic wrangle.
President Trump is using the fact that he wants permission to use that base for the military operation on Iran as a leverage, as it were, by saying, we're not going to support the deal unless you allow us to use the base.
Retailers enjoyed a busy January with the biggest increase in sales for more than a year and a half. There was a rise of 1.8%, up from 0.4% in December. The government has announced a new 10-year strategy to control rising numbers of deer. It'll identify priority culling areas and make it easier to carry out licensed nighttime and closed season shooting. Ministers insist the animals won't be demonised, but say action is needed to protect woodland, crops and wildlife. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 72 at £10,699. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, a dry but cloudy end to the morning for most. Some bright spells and showers will develop by the afternoon, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with this Friday's £109 million super jackpot. So super, you've got to dance. So let's dance like never before. On a beach? On your own private island? Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Subject to currency fluctuation. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11. Do you know, there's a little bit of me now that, you know how this always happens, doesn't it? When the calls are as good as they were in the last hour. You're nudging me towards the why. Why do we still put up with it? Why do we still sign up for it? You know, that brilliant reminder of the importance of not letting the light in when Tim in Belfast started channeling the 19th century constitutional expert Walter Badgett and suggested, I think the first person I've heard do so, whether they're professionally providing their opinions or whether they're just kind enough to ring us, that idea that you can only sustain the absurdity of the royal family by sustaining the mystique. And the minute the mystique dissipates, the absurdity becomes undeniable. The absurdity becomes unbearably obvious. And if you can just take away a princeship, whatever the word is, if you can just demolish a dukedom, if you can just take it away, like Queenie in Blackadder 2, then the mystique does dissolve. Previous examples of mystique dissolving include the very unseemly revelations about Charles's affair with Camilla and the entire family's very unpleasant reaction to the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, up to and including the funeral where Harry was essentially imagine the trauma that was done to that boy that day. I mean, genuinely extraordinary. And yet the rehabilitation of reputation is today pretty complete. And Charles has had a good innings, not least when you consider that his health hasn't been great during this period of kingship. But he has got everything more or less right, everything that has unfolded in public. We still don't know what has happened in private. But the mystique, the magic, is probably under graver threat than anything else. And that will be a slow process. It could be. And Emily Maitlis yesterday, of course, reminded us of one of the quotes we hideously overuse on this programme, originally about bankruptcy, as written by Ernest Hemingway, first gradually, then quickly. Or first slowly, then quickly. I forget precisely the wording of it. But, you know, that idea of momentum, that idea of the weight of opinion, starts off quite slowly and then suddenly it becomes an irresistible force. I don't personally think it's going to happen, but then you wouldn't, would you, if it was an incremental process? It rains and then it pours, Eleanor just wrote on my screen in a very poetic fashion. But that's the point, isn't it? You might be out in the rain thinking it will soon pass, and the next thing you know, you've been washed away down towards the river. So I don't know whether or not the royal family is in that sort of jeopardy. But I do know that it's a question worth asking, not least when you see headlines in ordinarily quite responsible and sensible newspapers saying things like, royals survived the abdication, but this crisis is worse. And I suppose this morning we have been addressing the question of why. If that's true, why is this crisis worse than the abdication scandal? 03456060973. And continue to address the question, how much trouble do you think the royal family is actually in? So I've got some phone lines free. 03456060973 is the number that you need. I think you knit together the mystique point with the no one is above the law, because the more that you remove the mystique, the more some of the trappings of privilege appear ridiculous. So the removal of the title, the fact that the king is technically unable to ever be arrested, all of these things add up to an image that is almost impossible to believe that we still bow to, that we still bow and scrape to. Then you've got the question, the crucial question of how much clear blue water the royal family can put between them and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Most pertinently, how much clear blue water Charles can put between him and his brother. Less important, I think, is the emerging evidence, because much of it has already been known, that Andrew is, was, and always will be an absolute whopper, an almost uniquely arrogant and entitled man, and a gulf between his image of his own gifts and importance and the reality of what everybody else could clearly see is about as wide as the Grand Canyon. opinion. There's a psychological explanation, by the way, for why he would have been the Queen's favourite, but it may be a little bit out of my comfort zone for me to explain to you what it is. 8 minutes after 11 is the time. If the royal family can survive It's a Royal Knockout, writes Tim, then they can survive anything. Another one that perhaps needs to come with an age warning. That was a most... I mean, another really good... Do you know what that is? Do you know what It's a Royal Knockout is? I'm just asking younger colleagues. You don't think you were born when it happened, were you? So Edward, who manages to plough quite a quiet path these days, was once the member of the royal family most entranced by show business. I think he went to work for Andrew Lloyd Webber at one point, and he very much wanted to immerse himself in that world. And he came up with this idea that the royal family could take part in a game show. And it wasn't just a game show. It was a game show that involved adults sort of putting on sumo suits and running into each other. I can't remember the exact details of what they did. But if you needed evidence of the dangers of letting the light in, then It's a Royal Knockout, as they inevitably called it, would be an incredibly powerful piece of evidence for the prosecution. They made them look not only like human beings, but also ridiculous. They made themselves look not only like human beings, but also ridiculous. And I guess it was conceived as a way of connecting with the public. But you can't connect with the public if you've got no idea what it's like to be a member of the public. So Tim's line is funny, but also surprisingly pertinent. Speaking of funny, I spent the day in London yesterday with my grandchildren, writes Dave in Biggin Hill. They're 5 and 7. I completely missed all the news, but I did go on the London Eye. Thanks for keeping us in the loop, Dave. I messaged my brother at about 5:45 on the way home, and he replied, amazing news. I thought, excellent, we must have won the curling. So, you know, the life goes on, doesn't it, outside of these contemplations and conversations, but they are interesting and important conversations, because the royal family is so baked into our shared experience and our life that if it is in jeopardy at the moment, and I think it probably is, just not quite as much as some commentators contend, then it is a matter of interest to all of us. 10 minutes after 11 is the time. Do you feel we've missed anything so far? Is what else would you add to this list? The gulf between Charles and Andrew, the reminders of the essential absurdity of majesty or monarchy, the way that removing the titles lets the light in and just perhaps sows seeds of destruction that may not bloom or blossom for years. What else should be on this list in answer to these questions? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Gary is in York. Gary, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. It's great to speak to you. And the way you've described things this morning, you've almost taken away some of my thunder, as it were.
Well, that's the highest praise you could pay me, Gary. Yeah. Great minds. Go on.
I sort of grew up in Greater Manchester. I was a similar age to Charles, and there was always... My family weren't anti or pro-monarchy. They enjoyed the Christmas message and so on. But I always, even as a child, thought of how illogical it was that somebody, just by virtue of being born, might find that they had the attributes of being a head of state, and that was just granted to them. Whereas I was brought up with a background partly of Methodism and of the sort of aspirational working class, and taught that, you know, to study, to through education and hard work to gain
egalitarianism, really. The polar opposite of monarchy.
And then sort of in my 20s, I found that I had similar views to Tom Paine, who in The Rights of Man talked of the absolute nonsense of a hereditary head of state over 200 years ago. But that's not a lot's changed since that was...
Nothing's changed, really.
And I just think that in a sense, the monarchy is kind of the pinnacle of, if you like, unearned privilege, you know, unearned entitlement, you might say. They sort of legitimise it, and I think the House of Lords is something that should be sort of taken into account when thinking about what,
These strange traditions that would never be introduced today if they were... Well, I say that. I think Trump's having a fair go at making the first king of America, isn't he? The first king of an independent America.
Absolutely,
but you wouldn't imagine an informed and rational population would institute a lot of the things that we have and rarely question simply because they've been around for 1,000 years. Why do you think, and I want you to have a crack at this, even though I don't think any of us are going to go definitive, Why do you think some people are the opposite of you? Because what's so clear to you and was clear to Thomas Paine and is usually clear to me, although I can sometimes get caught up in the pomp and ceremony, is obviously not clear to huge swathes of the population. Do they never question the absurdity or the unfairness of it, or do they not care?
It's difficult to say, really. I mean, it seems that, I mean, I think the media has a lot to do with it, and yes, they do sort of hype up, you know, the 6-page spreads of various royal events and stuff, and there is a kind of, you know, a sort of willingness to follow, I think, in that sense, when it seems to be how things are, and we should celebrate it, and they're, you know, they're providing a great sort of colour and sort of spectacle for the rest of the world. But I just, and there has been in the past sort of descriptions of, you know, presidents of other countries.
I wonder if we didn't teach our daughters that being a princess is the sum total of their human ambition, whether or not that is a contributor to the royal family. We sort of inculcate each other from an extremely early age, and you were clearly spared this by dint of your upbringing, but most people are inculcated from a very early age that this is the natural order, when it's actually one of the, and Thomas Paine makes this point better than I ever will, it's one of the most unnatural orders that you can imagine human beings living under.
I think we proclaim quite loudly, and quite rightly in many respects, the democracy that this country has. But it's a partial democracy. I mean, there's nothing democratic about the House of Lords when people... Mm. I can think... I don't know if I name a Tory candidate for Parliament who failed three times and then was made a Lord and then became a part of the Johnson government. I mean, three times the electorate...
Three times a lady. Three times a Lord. I think that the subsequent Tory leaders have made an absolute mockery of the House of Lords with some of the appointments that they made. Toby Young is in the House of Lords. I always do a double take when I see that. And Sharon Davis is there now as well, the former Olympic swimmer. All you have to do is be an effective troll on the internet, and Kemi Badenoch will put you in the House of Lords. But you're right, it reminds us of the inadequacy of our democracy, which we like to hold up as an ideal. The mother of all parliaments is not, and I'm sure Gary knows this, but I didn't until quite recently, is not the UK Parliament. It's the UK that is... supposedly the mother of all parliaments, as in they followed our lead. But the UK Parliament is profoundly flawed, as Gary reminds us, and in many ways, given that the Lords is as much a part of the institution of Parliament as the Commons is, it's not democratic at all. Thank you, Gary. 11:15. Should we move on to... I mean, I've got other people answering the questions that have been on the board, and I want to continue doing that. But should we have a crack at why? I mean, have you ever stopped to wonder? And I mean, talking to you now, particularly if you are not the kind of person that would queue up overnight or pitch your tent outside Windsor Castle in the hope of having a glimpse of someone through a tinted window the following morning, but somebody who would be sort of, would describe yourself as mildly monarchic. You like the royal family, and you've never actually wondered why. Why in 2026 are we still in thrall to inequalities that were first enshrined in their current form in 1066? Is that 960 years ago? I should never do maths live on the radio. It always ends in tears. But that because we didn't have a mass media then. We didn't have a mass media then telling us to bend the knee and tug our forelock until they decide in their wisdom to take away the instruction to bend our knee and tug our forelock, at which point we have to start throwing rotten tomatoes at the people we were previously bending our knee and tugging our forelock to, which has happened to Prince Harry for reasons that are still almost impossible to discern, and is happening now to Andrew for reasons that are entirely obvious and clear. But why do we still do it? Why do you still do it? Why do we still do the whole monarchy thing when it makes an absolute mockery of all the other values that we claim to hold dear? The values of egalitarianism, the values of liberty, the values of equality. All the values that we're supposed to hold dear, democracy, are absolutely made a mockery. What a strange country we are sometimes. And you take a moment to step back and have a look through the window. Why do we still hold the monarchy? Because this is an inevitable subtext, I think, to the question of whether or not they are in mortal peril as we speak. Why are they still in place at all? What is it about the institution that has allowed it to survive in its current form, more or less unchanged, for so long, when to be honest, if we're completely straight with each other, if you think about it for more than a couple of minutes, the ridiculousness of it all becomes absolutely irresistible. It's 11:18. The number you need to answer that question, or indeed any of the other questions that we've been looking at this morning, is and always will be 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling.
Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy-to-manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 20 minutes after 11. How would you score it so far with the calls? I don't know how I would. Maybe we've been too nuanced in our conversations instead of insisting on a binary yes or no. Are they doomed? Can they survive the current scandal? But I found it absolutely fascinating, and some of the contributions coming in via other media are equally engaging. I wonder what the Commonwealth realms make of all this, asks Anthony. Canada, Australia, etc. Surely they need a say. Well, they've got phones, Anthony. They've got as much access to this programme as you have just exercised. Chris makes a powerful point, picks up on some of the points we've heard and adds a few more. It's not the royal family that needs to change, it's all of us. They have always been undeserving of deference. If the British people finally throw off deference and sycophancy, then that'll be it. We will finally be able to move forwards as a nation. I quite like the poetic language that Phil Imbista deploys. We are on the cusp of the crumbling of the fantasy. You don't even need the last three words there, or the first three. The cusp of the crumbling. This is the cusp of the crumbling. Sounds like that song, doesn't it? The Age of Aquarius. This is the cusp of the crumbling. And I really like this from Brendan. The monarchy is like money. They only exist because we all agree that we believe in them. It bestows an almost mythical status on monarchy. I love that. Have a look at the banknote in your pocket if you've got one. Promise to pay the bearer, the sum of. It's a contract, essentially. Why do we promise to pay the monarch deference and reverence and huge sums of money as a reward for being born into an incredibly... I don't know, is the short answer. I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, far from it. I'm not going to be turning up anytime soon on the mail with a little flag and waving it, but equally, it doesn't animate me particularly until I think about it, at which point my lifelong commitment to and belief in mobility and equality becomes hugely exercised by the knowledge that this institution is the biggest obstacle to both. Chris is in Exeter. Chris, what would you like to say?
Hi there.
Hello,
yeah,
Chris.
called you a couple of years ago when Kate Middleton was in the news.
Okay.
Not particularly about her, but when, you know, the...
You're going to have to forgive me for not remembering, Chris. Is that all right?
Yeah, no, it's the Mother's Day photo that came out and then was killed by the Associated Press because basically Kensington Palace had been proven to be an untrustworthy news source. So, not about her, but just about how the media...
Because it had been photoshopped, was it?
Yeah, a completely made-up photo. Yeah. It was more than just an adult. It was was composite picture.
Yeah, that is relevant today.
Yeah. But that I thought, was a really good example where people maybe had a chance to look again at who these people are. And I'm not saying they're awful people. I'm saying they're very average, unimpressive people. The only special thing about them is the position that they have, the money, the power. And if we think of what they should achieve for the point of the country with all the influence they're given, I just find them lacking at every point. Like, the Queen is lionized over and over again. But I don't know, if you had that power over decades, wouldn't you have done a bit more for the country than soft power and tourism and all those things that are hard to quantify?
The top priority for all of them is all of them.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's not actually the country. I think this is probably the biggest myth of all. The top priority is survival. The top priority is having, as with any member of any aristocracy at any point in history, that the whole point of existence is to pass on more to your heir than you inherited from your forebear. And the rest of it is gravy. And it's days like this that becomes absolutely crystal clear. I mean, I don't know if anyone who is in the zone that we're discussing is going to answer the question. So it's left to you and I and was it Gary in York to speculate on the motivations of other people. But why do we, in 2026, appear to have moved mere millimetres away from the levels of feudalism and deference that were on display 500 years ago? Why?
Because the conversation we're having now isn't happening enough. That, you know, MPs have to swear an oath of allegiance to even get in the House of Commons.
Mm.
The royal rota are on the inside. That's how they get the jobs. Lords and sirs and all these sort of people, it's all, you know, I'm not saying all the establishment is wrong, but it's embedded, isn't it? And so the reform isn't going to happen from the top. Charles or Will, slim down monarchy, isn't going to happen. It's only going to happen, basically, if we do get to the point of a vote for a referendum on abolition. You just see me like a public swell of opinion. And it's these stories that need to keep being seen and talked about. And I think we only need to get to 20-30% of people who really dislike this situation, that it could change overnight.
And that's the crucial distinction. Yeah. That's beautifully drawn, because it's not about disliking people. It's about disliking a system. And what happens, of course, is that if you dislike the system, whether it's deliberate or not, they will immediately accuse you of not liking the people. And you end up being accused of being cruel to a little old lady, in the case of the late Queen, or to a man that's currently suffering from cancer, in the case of the current King. Or do you know what I mean? It's conversation, when you try to start it with regard to the system, moves very, very quickly to the individuals, and that's not fair or right.
And that's the thing, like, these people, they are the products of their upbringing. The same way you might point at, like, a criminal and say, is it because of their genetics or is it their upbringing and their poverty?
Yeah.
People like Andrew, who I think is just a not very nice person, I can't go any further than that.
No, thank you.
He is a product of just too much power, too little accountability, and too much deference.
Yeah, and so
this is what it leads to.
That's where he becomes a pivotal point, potentially, because it is a reminder. He really highlights the absurdity of the entire system, because regardless of the current allegations, just the long track record of absurdity, idiocy, unpleasantness, arrogance, entitlement, all of those things are creations or consequences of the system. And look, all right, show me a royal, show me his sister, who everyone constantly insists is absolutely wonderful and a fine example of everything. But they don't cancel each other out. The system creates him. And she, if she is a deeply impressive person who's made enormous contributions to the public good, she could have done all of that without the enormous silver spoon that she was born with. Plenty of people manage to be wonderfully productive and community-minded and make enormous contributions to the public weal without being born into incredibly privileged families. It's not as if that her supposed goodness is a consequence of the system she was born into, where his clear badness in the context of all the stuff that is known and established is clearly a consequence of just as Boris Johnson could never have been Boris Johnson without the public school system, without Eton College, without, you know, decades, centuries, if you like, of schools teaching boys that they are born to rule the empire. So the system is what Andrew Windsor is highlighting, and the system is what's vulnerable. How vulnerable do you think it is? Because this is clearly a subject you give quite a lot of thought to. How vulnerable do you think it becomes in this moment and moving on?
I think just in how politics is going to be weird and go extreme, potentially one way or another, at this point, it's very vulnerable. It's something that should be looked at in the context of wider inequality and change for the country. So, and it's the language I care about. In other words, Majesty or Your Highness.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that, we need to either be embarrassed about it or at least question it. Like, I don't want to plug it, but like, I wrote a whole book about what does Majesty mean, because I just find the word weird. Stupid.
I found myself earlier saying King, there was a little bit of me that balked. King Charles.
Yeah.
And this was the great point made earlier, I think, by Roger, that if you can take it away, if you can take away a prince, you can take away anything. I think you should plug your book. What's the full title of it?
It's a satire, so it's Harry Windsor and the Magic of Monarchy. It's a bit of an odd book, but it's basically, making fun of what it all means. Like, is it special? Are they special? What does Majesty mean?
Well, they're not, are they? What was it about? Because I was interested in our friend in York being raised as a Methodist, and that teaching him, from a religious perspective, the opposite of what the royal family teaches us sometimes from a religious perspective when they try to deploy the divine right of kings. What was it about your upbringing that brought you to such a clear and strong position on this subject?
I think a bit like you, I went to a posh school but on a bursary, so I was one of those people slightly on the outside. You know, right. I've had the luck of being surrounded by posh people in manor houses and stuff,
yes.
But I wasn't from that wealth, but then again, my brother went the opposite way, kind of thing, you know, how some people can...
And he bought a signet ring.
I don't know, I think it's just that, I just...
The closer you get to these people, the more you recognise that their feet are made of clay, that they're exactly the same as everybody else, and the more ridiculous it becomes to bestow them with absurd levels of deference and privilege. But you can go the other way. Jacob Rees-Mogg's granddad was a lorry driver. And yet he adopts this ludicrous persona because he recognises that by doing so he can become part and a beneficiary of the ludicrous system. He can edge closer to the pinnacle of the pyramid by talking as if he's got 8 snooker balls lodged in his cheeks. Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
A number of unmarked police vehicles are at Royal Lodge, the former home of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. The former prince was released from custody last night following his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Officers are looking into allegations that he shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein when he was Britain's trade envoy. Mr. Mountbatten Windsor has previously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Epstein. The British co-founder of the fashion retailer ASOS has died in Thailand. Police say they believe Quentin Griffith fell from a balcony in the city of Pattaya. Initial investigations suggest no evidence of foul play. And the Foreign Secretary will travel to Washington later for talks after Donald Trump withdrew support for the UK's Chagos Islands deal. It's understood the US President changed his mind earlier this week following a row over the use of British air bases. LBC weather, a dry but cloudy end to the morning for many. Some bright spells and showers developing in the afternoon. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC. Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs. Your car connects you to the places you want to go. Your radio connects you to each other and the things you love.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe. and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's Best Family Electric SUV of the Year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car Award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I get haunted sometimes by your contribution. Haunted in a good way. I just what's a better word than that? But Brendan, that's such a powerful text. I don't know if this is entirely your own work. It doesn't really matter. I'll be passing it off as mine in the not too distant future. The monarchy is like money. They only exist because we all agree we believe in them. Do you know the question that created Mystery Hour? At least this is the myth. This is the legend that we've printed. It may not actually be true. It happened so long ago, I can't remember the exact circumstances in which Mystery Hour came to life. But we had a different management at the time, and they were conducting a not entirely successful experiment in the kind of things that presenters would ask listeners. And they went through this weird period of insisting that we shouldn't be allied to the news. We should come on air and ask questions that had absolutely nothing to do with the news, which... as I say, it wasn't an entirely successful exercise. I think I remember a couple of colleagues asking callers what their favourite biscuit was or what colour they'd painted their front door. But I may be misremembering. We did, however, stumble into at least one decent phone-in when we asked why gold is valuable. Why is gold valuable? And I'm reminded of that moment by Brendan's text. The monarchy is like money. They only exist because we all agree we believe in them. I won't be haunted by this one. Hi, James. So if you were to be given a knighthood for services to broadcasting, would you turn it down? Asks Merlin in Poland.
Yeah.
Well, there's only one way to find out, Merlin, isn't there? Perhaps you could put a word in. Back to the broader questions of this moment, but also of this phenomenon. Why? I don't think we're stupid, although obviously 52-48 seems to be a pertinent ratio when contemplating the intelligence of the population. Why are we still such a nation of forelock tuggers and cap doffers when really we've got access to more information than ever before? Peter's on the Wirral. Peter, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Yeah, thanks for taking the call. It's something you mentioned before. One of the callers, I think it was, said it's down to us to change the monarchy. And I think the reason we haven't, or it hasn't happened, I think it comes down to quite a bit of it from our education system, of the way we teach the history of Britain, of our country, and whatever. I'm just rereading Empireland at the moment. I read it some time ago, but I'm just doing it again.
Yeah.
And I come to a section there, I think it's Santham, his name is?
Satnam.
He was saying...
Satnam Sangira.
He studied in Oxford, and he said it wasn't till his final year in Oxford he realised he hadn't read a piece of literature that wasn't written by an imperialist white person.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, he then started thinking about his schooling and said, I think he said something along the lines of, I think I am an imperialist. He said that they've taught me to be that in school. I think that's what we're doing, or yes, what we have done. I'm 76 years old, and it took me until my 50s to understand the implication of Edward VIII's abdication,
yeah,
what actually happened behind it. But most people, they accept their education, you know, from formal education. I mean, I know we have the ability.
Of course, but most of us don't really go off piste, do we? We imbibe only what is served to us by our teachers.
Yes, and the formal education we have literally just tells us the good bits of what's happened.
Well, and also, you know, we're in a weird period now, and I just veer into this briefly before coming back to you, where this increasing these increasing claims from all the racists who are currently enjoying their 15 minutes that you can't be British if you're brown, or you can't be British if you're... Their ignorance of empire is absolutely extraordinary. So, you know, there are a million different problems here. There's the one that Satnam beautifully highlights in Empire Land, which is the fact that history is written by the imperialists to the exclusion of everybody and everything else. But then, of course, the racists are currently embarked upon a mission to ignore the reality and the existence of empire and the fact that it did bestow British citizenship on people from the dominions that we annexed and that we overtook. I studied, and I joke about this quite a lot, I studied Charlemagne for my history A-level. Charlemagne at the Byzantine Empire, Peter. And yes, it was only when I went to People's History Museum in Manchester that I learned about the Levellers, the Diggers, the Ranters, the Peterloo Massacre, all of the examples from English history and British history where the edifice shook a bit, where the idea that the pyramid of our population has to be built on such unfair footings, because it just has to. It's an inevitability of history and humanity. Those moments in our history where it became clear that that is not true, they are vulnerable, they are toppleable, we never get taught about those, really. Hardly ever.
I think the reason we never get taught, James, is because if we did, it would break the triangle, what I call the triangle of privilege, which starts at the royal family. And it starts, they're the peak of the privilege. You know, the king is above the law, blah, blah. But if we ever teach the children, or people get to know that Lord or the Earl of so-and-so really shouldn't have that land or doesn't deserve, you know, to be there. And I think he says in his book that there's a reason why people from foreign lands send their children to our public schools, people of note, the leaders of foreign lands, because they get taught in our schools
that's it. I did an event. I hope he won't. I'm sure he won't mind me sharing this, because it was a public event. And I was talking about this. I've written a little bit about it myself. And Chris de Burr was there. He's such a nice man at a literary event in Ireland. And he'd attended an English public school, and he's a bit older than me. And he said, well, that's literally the words they used, James. They told us that we were soldiers of empire. Yeah. They were still teaching us that we were soldiers of empire. So if our ruling class is being taught that, and then they're in charge of everything else, it's hardly a mystery at all that the royal family has sustained, despite being such an example, an epic example of inequality.
As Michael Gove said, we've had enough of experts. No, he did, didn't he?
I know he did, kind of.
Yeah, we don't want working class people with first class degrees in any other subjects. We just want us.
Tug for lock, vote Brexit.
I think it's only through education that for our younger generations. I think for us, these 70, 80 year olds, I think that ship has sailed. But I was speaking with a nephew. Wednesday, I was speaking to a nephew, and he is far more alive to the vagaries of the royal family than I thought he would be.
That's interesting. Well, it is.
Yeah, he really was.
The generational shift is well worth keeping an eye on, well worth tracking. And you know, on the one hand, you think, well, this could yet prove to be an enormous fracture. And on the other, you remember the previous reminders of the inalienable fallibility and frailty and humanity of members of the royal family, and that didn't prove to be fatal to the institution's existence. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, that idea, in answer to the other question I asked at the beginning of this hour, why on earth do we still put up with it? It's because we don't really get given a little, we don't get a glimpse of the rabbit of alternative, do we? My favourite example of what Peter was talking about is actually Robert Kett. How many people know who Robert Kett is? Do you know who? Have you heard of Robert Kett? Kett's Rebellion. So a couple of things that are interesting, if, like me, you find this kind of stuff interesting. The first is, I was speculating yesterday on where they might have taken Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. And I presumed that because it was Thames Valley Police, they would have taken him to Kidlington in Oxfordshire, which is the HQ of Thames Valley Police. But a couple of texters who had all of the appearance of knowing what they were talking about said it wouldn't have to be the HQ. They could have gone anywhere nearby. At which point I thought King's Lynn Police Station. I should have checked. I'm sure this is in the... Do we know where he was? Because one contender, and I haven't actually absorbed that little bit of information, despite the fact that it's out there in the public domain, because they got that extraordinary photograph of him being driven away from the police station. So we must know which police station it was. And it may ruin my story, so don't tell me yet which police station it was, because it could have been Wyndham. There's an HQ in Wyndham. That could have been relevant to this particular arrest. Wyndham is one of those curious English towns that's spelt entirely differently from how it is pronounced. It's spelt Wymondham. But Wyndham is a small village outside Norwich, is where Kett's Rebellion began. And Robert Kett, was a, I can't remember whether he was a butcher or something like that, but he was essentially a landowner, and the population was rebelling against the enclosure of land. This is under Edward VI, so you're going back to the late 1540s, and rebels were knocking down the fences that had been put up by wealthy landowners so they could replace, if you like, a sustained agriculture economy with grazing sheep and animals. So they're tearing down the, and one landowner sided with them. Robert Kett not only sided with the rebels, he essentially offered to lead them. And he became the leader of a rebellion that then got named after him. And they successfully successfully took Norwich. Now, don't laugh, because I say Norwich, you say Alan Partridge. Norwich at the time, I think, was the second city of England. The second biggest city of England. And this rebellion successfully took Norwich. They treated their prisoners very well. The mayor of Norwich, who had been the sort of leader of the establishment, the ruling class, was living in, I think it was kept in a tent on the heath where the rebels coalesced. And they had to send the Earl of Warwick to tackle this. It was a proper moment in English history where a grassroots rebellion of the English people caused the monarchy itself to wobble. The Earl of Warwick being the aristocrat who was sent to lead royal forces at the Battle of Dussindale. Kett inevitably was executed, hanged for treason from the walls of Norwich Castle. And that is not something that you've been taught, right? In fact, I wonder what percentage of people... It was at Aylsham Police Station, so my Wyndham point, although interesting, was largely irrelevant. How many people, hands up now, everybody listening to this, not if you knew about that. All right, that's second question. Hands up if you were taught about that in school. Hands up if you were taught about Kett's Rebellion in school. How can you not have been taught about that? You've probably been taught about rebellions in outposts of empire undertaken by the natives and squashed by us more than you've been taught about a rebellion in Norfolk and one that was initially very, very successful and potentially could have been even more successful. You've not been taught about that, and you know why, right? Because it might give you ideas. It might give you ideas. And the Civil War is imbued in the collective memory as proof that you can't trust us to rule ourselves. Isn't it? Oh, well, Oliver Cromwell was all right for a while, but my goodness me, we had to get the king back sharpish. Things were in a right old mess. So the Civil War, a successful overthrow, still something that's probably undertaught in our schools, but it has become, in the public memory, proof that we can't be trusted to look after ourselves. When I say monarchy infantilizes the population, it's probably an understatement. Oh, no, we can't be trusted to look after ourselves. We need a nice king. And you see it happening in America now. You see really tragic humans, not all of whom are really stupid by any stretch of the imagination, but they are all pathetic in the purest sense of the word, who think that Donald Trump can provide them with leadership and security. Infantilized doesn't come close to what you'd have to be to arrive at that conclusion. But we don't get taught. We don't get shown the evidence that things don't have to be the way that they are. And for me, lest you think I'm sort of claiming to be holier than thou, the only reason I know about Thomas, Robert Kett. I think he had a brother possibly called Thomas. But the only reason I know about Robert Kett is because this features as the backdrop in a historical fiction novel that I really enjoyed, probably by C.J. Sansom. The Shard Lake mysteries that have, of course, been turned into a brilliant television series. So I never got taught it. And I enjoyed one of the most expensive educations available anywhere in the English-speaking world. I never got taught about Robert Kett. I lived in Norwich for a year or so without knowing about Robert Kett. That's mad, right? How many people are listening to this in Norwich and don't know the story of Kett's Rebellion? That's incredible. I just saw a sea of hands go up. It's 11:49.
This is LBC.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record, and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's Best Family Electric SUV of the Year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car Award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Whether you still own it or not, if you had a diesel car built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Diesel emissions claims are still open for Ford, Nissan, Renault, Mercedes, BMW and Jaguar Land Rover. Don't miss out. Join millions of drivers across the UK. Check your vehicle now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
James O'Brien on LBC.
11:51 is the time. I wonder if there's a book here. My next book. I'm sure someone's already done it, actually. And I'm not I'm not the man for that particular job. I don't have the history. Henry Reilly, as you know, is on holiday, so many of our colleagues have stepped up to the plate with regard to keeping an eye on Reform UK, as an eye almost as beady as the one that the Daily Mail deploys to keep an eye on the Labour government, the Labour Party, whether they are in power or not, of course. Who can forget the donkey sanctuary for which they tried to hang Keir Starmer? So we will begin, I think, in Manchester with Liam Gotting, our reporter in the Northwest. And a quick return, if you can help us, Liam, to the story of the Reform UK campaign manager in one of the wards relevant to the Gorton and Denton by-election. A full list of candidates is available at lbc.co.uk, who was accused of having posted some virulently anti-Semitic comments on social media. What's the latest up there?
Yes, James. Well, yeah, this is a story that comes jointly from the Manchester Mill, as well as the campaign group Hope Not Hate, who you had earlier on your show this week, James. This comes from them. It's Adam Machula. He's a campaigner for Reform UK in Tameside in Greater Manchester. He's been working alongside Matt Goodwin, Reform's candidate in the upcoming Gorton and Denton by-election, as you mentioned. Now, the Manchester Mill and Hope Not Hate have posted a number of tweets and comments allegedly made by Adam Machula. They're alleging that these posts are anti-Semitic, misogynistic and racist. The posts appeared to show Adam Machula participating in an online discussion in July of 2024 about Holocaust death tolls, saying that 6 million Poles, including some Jews, had been murdered. He also appeared to say that he would never touch a Jewish woman, and that he is also alleged to have used a racial slur. Now, this was part of a wider report from Hope Not Hate, which highlighted multiple campaigners and activists for Reform. And the latest on this comes from the Jewish News, which reports that Adam Machula has been suspended pending an investigation. Now, these posts, as far as we could see, James, have been deleted, and we have contacted Reform UK for a comment, but we are yet to receive one as of yet.
Matt Goodwin must have had something to say. You can hardly shut the fellow up.
Well, we've yet to hear from Matt Goodwin on that. Just to say, you know, Reform UK, you know, have not been the only one who have had controversies throughout this by-election campaign. We know police are investigating claims that Labour tried to bribe voters with food in the upcoming by-election. That probe comes after a video emerged of an event where attendees were told to hold up posters if you want to get fed. Now, Labour have claimed that that event was not in breach of electoral law because the rules against so-called treating still allow for what is known as ordinary hospitality. So it's been a by-election where there's been a few fingers pointed at a few different parties, James.
Indeedy doody. Remind us when the ballot is.
It is 6 days from now. It's Thursday, the 26th of February.
And, of course, a full list of candidates is available at lbc.co.uk. And elections always happen on Thursdays, which is why Mystery Hour happens on Thursdays, because we can't talk about politics on days when there's a ballot. And Mystery Hour means there's at least 1 hour of the programme that we can produce or predict in advance. It wouldn't be Reform UK if there weren't any defections. Aggie Chambre is with me, our deputy political editor, to take up where Henry Reilly left off. He's on air at the moment. He's not in his normal day job, by the way. So don't worry. I think he was on last night. How many defections have you managed to find this week?
Six councillors this week. So one to the Conservatives, five to Restore Britain. So John Roddy.
Is that the People's Front of Judea or the Judean People's Front?
That is Rupert Lowe's new outfit, new movement political party.
He's the fellow that got elected as a member of Reform, hasn't had a by-election, and has now set up his own outfit because he fell out with Farage.
That's the very same, James. So John Roddy was elected as a Reform councillor in August 2025, the only Reform councillor in Warrington. But he said he's had detailed concerns with Reform about Warrington's ongoing financial issues, and said there's been no serious engagement from Reform about the scale of the challenge and no credible local strategy to address it. So he's gone to the Conservatives, leaving no Reform councillors in Warrington. Charles Whitford was a Reform councillor in Leicestershire. He was actually a cabinet member in Leicestershire too, but he was removed from that previously, seemingly for emails he sent that immigrants were coming to make the UK a Muslim state, leading to residents accusing him of whipping up hatred. But he said his decision isn't a Reform UK problem nationally. It's specifically with the council leader, Dan Harrison. Dan Harrison has said he's not been a settled soul. That's the end of it. These things do happen. Doesn't alter anything. Good luck to him. Wish him all the best. Now, in Warwickshire, They've lost two Reform UK councillors to Restore Britain. There were previously rumours about these two guys, Scott Cameron and Luke Cooper, that they were going to go. So George Finch, who's the leader of Reform Council there, removed the whip, removed them from the party, and now they have actually gone to Restore Britain. And as a result, Reform UK and Warwickshire now no longer lead that council. It's now gone to no overall control. And finally, in Northamptonshire, two Reform councillors have quit the party to go to Restore Britain too. And one of them, Jack Goncalves, he's the other one. The other one is Darren Rance. Jack has said Reform has reneged on its founding purpose and accused the national leadership of trying to integrate themselves into the socialist circuit that runs our country.
Oh my days. You reminded me of Unhinged Headlines. Into the socialist circuit that runs our country. Circuit or circus?
Circuit.
Circuit. We've got two Unhinged Headlines today. Aggie's just reminded me of them. It would appear that members of Reform UK could be writing the Unhinged Headlines in the not too distant future. Did any of those defections, sorry, I got a bit distracted. Did any of those defections involve Staffordshire? Warwickshire.
Yes, we had.
Which one was that?
Warwickshire. So
this
Scott
is George Finch. This is the last one
yes.
that you mentioned. Okay,
because so
that's where the chairman has had to go because he'd been found to be illegally running two unsafe rental properties as well, according to a local authority.
So I think that's why Reform no longer have overall control.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
As a result, because they've just lost so many Reform.
And that's the only ones you could find. There might be more. Any on the way? What are we supposed to be keeping a watching brief for?
I think there could well be more on the way because it has been fractious in a number of those councils. It has been difficult. And I think they've all got different reasons, right? We've got a financial reason, we've got a personal reason, we've got a national reason, and we've of course got the socialist circuit that runs our country and the fact that the Reform aren't trying to challenge that.
I suppose it solves one mystery of why there is no Tory sufficiently ridiculous or disgraced to be told that they're not welcome in the Reform UK party. If this is what you attract via your normal recruitment processes, then goodness me, even Robert Jenrick begins to look like an attractive prospect. And speaking of Robert Jenrick, he has been proving once again that Reform is completely different and entirely distinct from what has gone before, the hideous broken two-party system or socialist circuit that Nigel and his cronies represent a complete break from. How has honest Bob Jenrick been making that point this week?
He has made that point in his first, after his first speech as so-called Shadow Chancellor. Of course, he is not Shadow Chancellor, but calling himself Shadow Chancellor. So the Reform's new Treasury spokesperson made a speech this week where he talked about committing to the OBR and to fiscal responsibility. And then he sent his speech to none other than former actual Chancellor George Osborne, saying, George, trust your well. Here's a copy of a speech I gave today on the economy. It commits to the OBR and to fiscal responsibility, which I hope you will approve of.
Good Lord.
George Osborne said on his podcast he did approve of it, yes, but he doesn't approve of much else in the Reform programme. And it sort of strikes slightly of a uni student sending an old school teacher's first essay.
That's kind. Yes, but also, I mean, Jenrick is supposed to be part of a party that would hold George Osborne in contempt, right? I mean, he would be emblematic of all of the things that they're supposed to be representing a departure from.
Well, they are trying to make this point over and over and over again, and I cannot imagine the top brass in Reform UK are delighted.
Well, they won't have known, will he? This is Jenrick being Jenrick and trying to curry favour with somebody else and keeping somebody else sweet. Farage presumably will be very cross that they're treating George Osborne like the sage, the economic sage at whose feet they should kneel.
Definitely, and especially after, you know, he's given him that number two job in Reform UK too.
Best bit of this story is Liz Truss weighing.
Yes.
Also, Liz Truss has weighed in on the story about Robert Jenrick asking George Osborne to mark his homework by saying, now we know why he doesn't want to abolish the OBR. If only there was some way of knowing what would happen if a senior politician decided to launch an economic policy that completely sidelined the OBR. You're the deputy political editor of LBC, Aggie, so you keep a closer eye on these things than I do. Would there be anything in the dim and distant past that would allow us to know what would happen economically if a prime minister or a chancellor decided to press ahead with their policies in direct opposition to or having completely sidelined the Office of Budgetary Responsibility? I can't think of anything.
I can't think of anything, apart from potentially when Liz Truss was Prime Minister for 49 days and seemed to sort of crash the economy with that so-called mini-budget.
Having completely sidelined the OBR?
Indeed.
Well, there you go. I knew you were the right person to ask. It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and... Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a number of unmarked police vehicles are at Royal Lodge, the former home of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. The former prince was released from custody last night following his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Officers are looking into allegations that he shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein when he was Britain's trade envoy. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is in Windsor with the latest.
They'll no doubt be looking for phones, computers, paperwork, hard drives, potentially even floppy disks, given that Andrew's role as UK trade envoy lasted about a decade, starting in 2001. This investigation will take quite some time. It could even be months before police officers have managed to go through everything that they have collected from both his new home in Sandringham and his old home here in Windsor.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has previously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Epstein. He's not responded to LBC's requests for comment on the specific allegations connected to the release of the latest Epstein files in January. The British co-founder of the fashion retailer ASOS has died in Thailand. Police say they believe Quentin Griffiths fell from a balcony in the city of Pattaya. Initial investigations suggest no evidence of foul play. The Foreign Secretary will travel to Washington later for talks after Donald Trump withdrew his support of the UK's Chagos Islands deal. It's understood the President changed his mind earlier this week following a row over the use of British air bases. Mr. Trump reportedly wanted to use them for possible strikes on Iran. Former UK ambassador to the UN, Sir Mark Lyle Grant, told LBC there are details that need clarifying from Washington.
I think, given the strength of the special relationship and the importance of that, I would be inclined to accede to the American request. But as a condition for that, you would want to know what is the objective of this military exercise? What does success look like? What is the purpose? Is it regime change? Is it an attack to prevent Iran having a nuclear weapon? Well, he claimed that the attack last year achieved that already.
And scientists in the United States say they're working on a single vaccine to potentially protect against coughs, colds and flu. Researchers say it's a major step forward, but human clinical trials are still needed. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 68 at 10,694. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers for many this afternoon, turning drier by tonight, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 12, Aggie Chambray is back in the studio. What's happened?
I think I've got an apology to make, James.
What's happened now?
In the last few minutes, I've discovered that one of the reform councillors from Northamptonshire that I just said had defected, Darren Rance, he did defect,
but
he's defected back.
What, to reform?
So, yes, so he went to Restore Britain.
You put your left leg in, sorry, you put your far right leg in, your far right leg out, in, out, in, out, you shake it all about.
So he went to Restore Britain, Rupert Lowe's new outfit slash party, for a day, and he's now defected back. He's put out a statement on social media this morning saying, "I'm announcing my decision to leave Restore immediately and start the process of rejoining my reform colleagues in North Northamptonshire Council. After being bombarded with desperate messages from Restore, I reluctantly joined. Unfortunately, I didn't realise what I was joining, and it only took me a day to work out what Restore does not stand for the values I believe in or was elected to serve. From messages I've received from both Restore supporters and those opposed, it's clear that this organisation stands for is far more sinister than I first thought." He then goes on to apologise to his reform colleagues and hopes he's readmitted so he can continue to serve as an elected reform councillor.
Ah, Well, thank you. I mean, I'm worried now about letting you leave the studio. What if some of the other ones that you've reported have defected start defecting back again? So is that... Here's a question for you, Aggie Schomburg. Is that two defections or no defections?
I think let's call it two.
Are you sure?
I think so, because he did leave. He did defect.
But then he's...
Well, he's... So, he's actually in the process of unleaving.
Will they have him back?
Well, yeah, they will. So, form leader Martin Griffiths has said that Darren's a very popular member of the group, and it does sound like he will be allowed back in. But at the moment, he sits as an independent before he actually officially gets let back in to reform. So maybe it's...
Could it be a
seven defections?
Could it be a cunning plan? Could it be a deliberate ploy to draw attention to what he describes as the sinister nature of the People's Front of Judea?
Potentially, but at the moment, he didn't actually put out a statement saying that he was joining Restore Britain. It was just that he and Jack Goncalves said they both were, and it was Jack Goncalves that then put out a statement saying about... You remember that quote about...
You can all agree you'd trust these people to run a massive economy, wouldn't you? At least. The reason I keep mentioning the People's Front of Judea and the Judean People's Front for the benefit of younger listeners is because of a rather splendid segment in Monty Python's Life of Brian, where the habit of political groupings to split into various sects is quite mercilessly and beautifully lampooned. Splitters is what they shout at each other, despite ostensibly agreeing about almost everything. It is little wrinkles and details that prompt them to set up their own organization. So what do you want to do? Do you want to bet your reputation on the fact that all of these other defections will remain in place, or do you want to keep the door open to the possibility that the revolving door, that it may be a revolving door and some of the other ones come back as well?
The latter, please.
Carry on. Aggie Schomburg, Deputy Political Editor. Many thanks indeed. The time now is 8 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's a little weird. There's part of me that doesn't really want to move on from the conversation about the royal family, and there's also part of me that can't help wondering. I love these moments, because my own producer is looking at me wondering what on earth we're going to be doing next on the programme. I don't know yet. Let's wait and see what... I can't help wondering about the way in which Donald Trump continues to be entirely immune to all of these developments. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary. So there are American politicians who have drawn upon the contents of the Epstein files and indeed commented upon them. Simon Marks discussed one of them yesterday, and some of the allegations or mentions of Donald Trump are every bit as bad as anybody else's. And yet the American administration, the American regime appears to be glossing over it. He looked straight down the barrel of a camera yesterday and said that he had been completely exonerated. I'll play you the clip. It's a shame you can't see it, because his face, even by his standards, is I mean, sort of palpably ridiculous. But this is... Well, listen to it now, because this is... So far, this is the current apotheosis of alternative facts. I lack whatever it is you need to keep track of the speed and the scale of the United States of America's decline, as represented, as evinced by Donald Trump. Because what you need to do now is imagine Ronald Reagan or Barack Obama or Joe Biden or George W. Bush. You have to imagine a previous U.S. president. Let's leave Nixon off the list. But you need to imagine a previous U.S. president looking down the barrel of a camera and claiming something that everybody knows to be untrue. Claiming something with regard to a huge story that everybody knows to be untrue. Everybody watching, everybody in his inner circle, everybody in his administration, everybody in his regime knows that it isn't true, but he somehow knows that he will get away with it. Partly as a consequence of shutting down so much of the previously half-decent media, partly as a consequence of innate cultishness, partly as a consequence of cowardice and querulousness among his inner circle. Everybody capable of telling him the truth has been removed from the process. But it's the public's role in this that I find so utterly impenetrable. I mean, people have been poring over the contents of the Epstein files and continue to do so in the aftermath of Andrew Windsor's arrest. Trump is in them, I think, more than anybody else, or at least as much as anybody else, and faces, as some US politicians have been making clear this week, extraordinarily unpleasant allegations, and yet he can look straight down the barrel of a camera and say this.
I got a question about something big overseas today. The former Prince Andrew arrested by the police there, related to something with Jeffrey Epstein. Do you think people in this country at some point, associates of Jeffrey Epstein, will wind up in handcuffs too?
Well, you know, I'm the expert in a way because I've been totally exonerated. That's very nice. I can actually speak about it very nicely. I think it's a shame. I think it's very sad. I think it's so bad for the royal family. It's a very, very sad. To me, it's a very sad thing. When I see that, it's a very sad thing to see it and to see what's going on with his brother, who's obviously coming to our country very soon, and he's a fantastic man, the king. So I think it's a very sad thing. It's really interesting because nobody used to speak about Epstein when he was alive, but now they speak. But I'm the one that can talk about it because I've been totally exonerated. I did nothing. In fact, the opposite. He was against me. He was fighting me in the election, which I just found out through the last 3 million pages of documents. Yeah, please.
So they were best friends for years. They stalked the night spots of New York together. And the reason why they fell out was reportedly because he was cross with Jeffrey Epstein for stealing young girls from the Mar-a-Lago. Young women from the Mar-a-Lago resort that Donald Trump owns. The idea that he's been completely exonerated by the files that have been made available is beyond wrong. Listen, I mean, he denies all wrongdoing. They all deny all wrongdoing. But the idea that he has been completely exonerated is, I don't have the words to explain how dishonest that is. I don't have the words, and I've got lots of words. I got the best words. I got a lot of words. I don't have the words to describe how dishonest that is. And here's something I've never said before. I almost wish you could see his face, because there's a smugness there that is, almost unbelievable, because I don't even know anymore whether he knows how dishonest he's being. Have you ever done that? Have you ever told a story in your life and embellished it slightly? And then I'll tell you who I was talking to this about last night. I was talking to Gary Lineker about this last night before we went on stage for the event that we did. Hang on a minute, let's just hear that name land, shall we? And I said to him, I was testing the research, some brilliant notes put together for me by my colleague Anya. But I know a story from Gary Lineker's past, and I know it because he told it to me in the past. And I said, I was just checking up on the quality of Anya's research by asking her if she mentioned Engelbert Humperdinck in the notes that she provided me to conduct the interview that I did with him for Full Disclosure last night on stage in central London. Another night out in central London. Loads of people came in from all over the country, actually. What was extraordinary is that none of them were scared or frightened of being in central London, just like two nights before when I'd been out in central London in Soho. Chubbing out. None of them were stabbed. None of them had their Rolexes stolen. None of the things that you might believe to be true if you spend all your life following racists and weirdos on Twitter, or indeed if you listen to the woman that Nigel Farage wants to run for mayor of London. None of them converted to Islam, as far as I'm aware, on the way home on the tube. Absolutely. So again, I think that's three nights out in London this week, including with 400 guests last night. Everybody absolutely fine. Everybody hunky-dory. So it must be a different London to the one that's been depicted and lied about by all the weirdness and weirdos and racists. But and the Engelbert Humperdinck thing was that he used to play poker with Gary Lineker's dad. It's just one of the most surreal celebrity things. Gary's dad was a market trader, fruit and veg market trader in Leicester. You probably know that already. And Engelbert Humperdinck hails from Leicester. And for reasons that I can't actually remember, they were part of the same poker school. So young Gary Lineker would sometimes come into the sitting room after his dad had been hosting a poker school at home in Leicester, and Engelbert Humperdinck would be asleep on the sofa. And I didn't remind him of this. I said to him last night, you can tell whether the research has been absolutely tip-top or not, because they would have included the Engelbert Humperdinck story. And he said, sometimes I have to double-check that that's true. He said, it's such a strange thing. Engelbert Humperdinck was like a kind of Timu Tom Jones. For younger listeners, a huge name at one point, absolutely huge name, not just in terms of the number of letters that are contained within Engelbert Humperdinck. It is objectively a huge name, but also a huge name in the context of fame and fortune. Lineker said last night, he goes, I met him a few years ago, and he said, oh, it's young Gary, I remember you, you know, sorry to hear about your dad. So he said it was definitely true. I almost needed Engelbert Humperdinck to remind me that the story was not some sort of mad, surreal flight of fantasy I'd undertaken. It was a true story. Do you think Trump ever does that? Do you think Trump actually tells himself he's been completely exonerated by the Epstein files? And then appears on television with a curiously smug expression on his face. It's not often I wish I could show you pictures, because everybody knows the pictures are better on the radio. See, if you close your eyes, don't do that if you're driving, and imagine that you can see his ridiculous face as you hear these words for the second time, because there is a smugness that is almost palpable here. Not that he has been exonerated. That wouldn't make you smug. That would make you relieved. But if you're lying about being exonerated and you know you're going to get away with it, that would make you smug. It's very easy to look smug. It's almost as easy, I think, to sound smug.
I got a question about something big overseas today. The former Prince Andrew arrested by the police there, related to something with Jeffrey Epstein. Do you think people in this country at some point, associates of Jeffrey Epstein, will wind up in handcuffs too?
Well, you know, I'm the expert in a way because I've been totally exonerated. That's very nice. I can actually speak about it very nicely. I think it's a shame. I think it's very sad. I think it's so bad for the royal family. It's a very, very sad. To me, it's a very sad thing. When I see that, it's a very sad thing to see it and to see what's going on with his brother, who's obviously coming to our country very soon, and he's a fantastic man, the king. So I think it's a very sad thing. It's really interesting because nobody used to speak about Epstein when he was alive, but now they speak. But I'm the one that can talk about it because I've been totally exonerated. I did nothing. In fact, the opposite. He was against me. He was fighting me in the election, which I just found out through the last 3 million pages of documents. Yeah, please.
Not the last 3 million. There's millions of pages that still remain unpublished, as Simon Marks reminded us yesterday. And he has not been completely exonerated. Far from it. Far from it. We've conducted 2 hours this morning of absolutely top-notch phone-in with contributions from all manner of fascinating people on the question of whether or not the royal family, the British royal family, is in existential danger as a consequence of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's inclusion in these papers and subsequent arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office, allegations and that he has denied, and all allegations of wrongdoing he has repeatedly denied. So it's almost as if, alongside the question of how much trouble the royal family currently finds itself in, and I'll take some more calls on that because I think it's so interesting, how come Donald Trump isn't currently in any trouble at all? And pause for a moment. Well, hang on, it's already 20 past 12. I'll come back and jump immediately onto this shortly. But that, unless you want to dive into the phones already, as someone who is following American politics, following American media, you've got business people who have been compelled to step down simply by dint of appearing in the files. You've got senior UK diplomats, you've got a former ambassador to the United States. Peter Mandelson's company has gone into administration this morning. His public and personal lives have been completely destroyed as a consequence of being in the Epstein files. You know that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has already had everything taken away from him, and quite possibly more to come. You'll be aware of a couple of business people, a couple of bankers who've had to step down from their high profile jobs. Is there not a Scandinavian former prime minister or president who's facing serious inquiries because of his associations in there? I mean, the list, this is just off the top of my head, I've got no notes in front of me, of people outside the United States of America is big and heavy and growing. Bill Gates has dropped out of some big international AI conference because of his inclusion in the Epstein files. Donald Trump's name appears in the Epstein files more often than Harry Potter's name appears in all 7 Harry Potter books. That's not quite as crushing a statistic as it initially sounds, because the Epstein files are so huge, and the Harry Potter books, although big, are nowhere near the scale of the Epstein files. But two things. He is all over them, and he has not, by any stretch of anybody's imagination, been completely exonerated. So what's going on there? How come people are now falling victim to the consequences of inclusion in these files. But Donald Trump's administration, which is full of and led by people with extremely well-established and well-documented links to the dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, so far remains entirely untouched. Have a crack, if you would, at explaining that to me. It's 12:21.
This is LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd pay off my mortgage and my mum's mortgage.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. But you forget to pay off those mortgages.
Whoops.
Because you're on a cruise with lots of money.
Money cruise, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
12:24 is the time. Hard question to answer. Why is Donald Trump so completely untouched by the Epstein files when other public figures whose proximity to him over years is considerably less well-established or problematic than his? But slightly easier question to answer, perhaps. Returning back to the question in the first 2 hours with that little twist that we encountered towards the end. How do you explain, given that the Andrew Windsor story demonstrates more powerfully than anything since 1647, the fundamental fallibility of members of the royal family, any notion of mystique and magic stripped completely bare by events and actually by that extraordinary photograph that features on all front pages this morning of a man brought quite spectacularly low, and yet the cap doffing, the forelock tugging, the deference that underpins the royal family has been more or less untouched for the best part of 1,000 years. Why do we still do it? 0345 6060 973. Ian is in Lancaster. Ian, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Yeah, it was funny when you first asked that question earlier in the show about, you know, why the certain factors of the UK look up to the royal family in this way. I'll tell you what song immediately jumped into my mind was Victoria by the Kinks.
Go on. I love a bit of Kinks.
You know that song? Pardon?
I love the Kinks.
Fair play. It was a lot of people mistakenly think that is a pro-British anthem and a pro-royal anthem, and it's actually anything but. It's actually Ray Davies of the Kinks asking the question, why do you hold the royal family in such high esteem when they've ultimately given you nothing, but particularly the working class? But I think in answer to your question of the why, I think a lot of the British public, and in fact a lot of the world, look to the royal family as a kind of identity of the country, that they look maybe for like security of something that is very traditionally British. But I think the trouble now is, if you look at, say, the last 15 years in the UK, you know, the amount of own goals we've scored as a nation have just slowly chipped away any ability to believe in Britain or Britishness. And if you take this latest calamity, you know, you have to ask, as a British person and as an outsider in a foreign country, you know, what is Britishness? What is the identity? What can we believe
in? Well, you're not supposed to think too deeply about it, are you? Because, I mean, obviously, even the phrase British values, which I've used myself in the past, is largely meaningless, because that would...
Absolutely.
It would suggest that if we identify a British value, then nobody else has it. So if we've got a British value, I don't know whether you want to say loyalty or social mobility or Christianity or whatever it is, you could point out they've got the same values in France or Spain or Ulaanbaatar. So you're not supposed to think about it. You're supposed to just feel it. And I think you're painting a picture of why the royal family is in a similar category. Don't think about it too deeply. Just feel it. Just feel whatever it is you feel when you're presented with the pomp and ceremony and the tradition and the history.
That's it. But I think that in terms of, if you look at the Brexit campaign, I know that's a different topic, but the slogan that went with that was Believe in Britain.
Yes, I think it is a different topic.
And I look at Britain and think, what am I believing in?
Don't think about things, just feel them. And if the right snake oil salesman can get you to feel fear of foreigners or, things that aren't true about our laws and our legal system, then you'll vote according to your feelings and in complete ignorance, if not contradiction of the actual facts.
Absolutely, like you mentioned the fear of foreigners there, and like that is the classic, you know, like people are trying to blame the decline of Britain on the immigrants, and it's like, I think you should be looking a bit closer to home for the culprit.
Well, of course you
the
should.
Architects of our decline, you know, and this latest escapade has just underscored that, you know, like you've got the country now potentially heading to a position in a couple of years where you've got a far-right government.
I think they would deny that they're far-right, but they're big believers in freedom.
I'm sure they will.
They're big believers in freedom of speech, so I'm sure they wouldn't object to you using that word.
You know, you've got that. You've got a country that's largely irrelevant to the USA, ignored, even despised, I would say, by Europe. And you've got the royal family on shaky ground. So you think, like, what is Britain? You know, we talk about rebuilding Britain, but it's like, what are we aiming for?
Do you think that what you describe is going to strengthen or weaken the royal family? Because from one end, it depends what end of the telescope you're looking through. Because if we are, through self-sabotage and through the tides of history, if we are diminishing ourselves as a country in one sense, then the royal family could become, the current difficulties notwithstanding, they could become more powerful because they're one of the few things left to cling to that make us look a bit better than other countries, or at least a bit more like what we used to look like when we were ruling the waves.
But that's exactly what I mean. I do think up to a point they have been something for some people to believe in. But I just think that will be lost now. I just think that kind of bastion of Britishness is just on shaky ground. And regardless of what might or might not happen in this investigation going forward, now the damage to the royal family, but a bigger picture is the damage to the UK.
That's interesting.
It's how we are now perceived.
I hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong.
I hope
you're wrong. But, I mean, who knows whether or not... And this is where the thing we can't really talk about, well, we definitely can't talk about, the who knew what and when will prove to be the most pertinent question of the coming weeks and months, because that will determine, in some ways... what the rest of the world will think of our royal family and hence of us. You did something, though, you know, which you didn't notice that you were doing, and a couple of people have picked up on it. I understand the purpose of Victoria, which is a beautiful song, but it's Sir Ray Davies now, isn't it?
He is, actually, yeah. that's one of the classics. It's like the most one of the British bands ever,
yeah.
Bemoaning or criticising
the establishment.
Everything Britain is supposedly founded on. But yes, you're right, he is Sir Ray Davies.
Fair play to the man. He's a genius. but I thought you'd appreciate that irony. I know that I do. 12:31 is the time. One of my favourites, I forget who it was, but I was friends with them. Back in the day, I can't remember who it was, and they had been ardent Republicans and deeply, passionately anti-monarchy, and they got offered an OBE, and they took it, and they said, I couldn't have told my mum. They said, I couldn't have looked my mum in the eye if I'd said no to a visit to the palace and a gong. It is 12:32, and Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
Police vehicles are at Royal Lodge, the former home of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as they look into allegations he shared confidential documents with Jeffrey Epstein. The former prince has previously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to the late paedophile. UK Athletics has admitted causing the death of a Paralympian hit by a metal pole in training. 36-year-old Abdullah Hayaye was injured at Newham Leisure Centre in East London in 2017. And a co-founder of online fashion giant ASOS has died after falling from a hotel balcony in Thailand. Quentin Griffiths fell from the 17th floor of the building in the seaside resort of Pattaya. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers for many this afternoon, turning drier by this evening, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Go where umbrellas are for cocktails. There's still time to get up to £300 off city breaks in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale, or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights, limited availability, holiday sale ends 3rd of March, min spend and ATOL protected, T's and C's apply.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Bring your pensions together into one easy-to-manage online plan with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. Helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Radio turns miles into memories. From sing-alongs with the family, road tripping with your friends, or continuing that conversation right into work. In-car entertainment is getting better and better, allowing you to create more memories than ever before. So make sure your next car suits all your radio needs. Your car connects you to the places you want to go. Your radio connects you to each other and the things you love.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's Best Family Electric SUV of the Year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car Award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345-6060-973.
It is 12:35. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've got two unhinged headlines for you, one of which was held over from yesterday when we were rather overtaken by events, and one is very much of today, although it ties back into the last caller's reminder that when you prioritise feelings over facts, not only do you perpetuate something as ridiculous as a monarchy, but you also can persuade a politician to vote for something as ridiculous as as Brexit. I've also got a multiple choice question for you, which I should have done during the Farage files, which we've done a decent job of keeping afloat while Henry Reilly has been enjoying some annual leave this week. Hopefully he will be returning to the breach and indeed to the files next week. But what did Nigel Farage do last week? I'm going to give you a choice of three things. Did he A, go for tea at the Ritz with George Osborne? Did he B, attend the launch of a book called How to Launder Money by a Convicted Criminal at the Raffles Hotel, another posh hotel? Or did he C, have afternoon tea with Boris Johnson at Claridge's? So which one was Nigel Farage up to last? The great man of the people, the upholder of British values, law and order, the enemy of the elites, the great scourge of the establishment. Did he A, have dinner with George Osborne at the Ritz? B, attend the launch of a book called How to Launder Money by a Convicted Criminal at Raffles? Or C, did he have afternoon tea with clotted cream and scones with Boris Johnson at Claridge's? Which of those do you think Nigel Farage was doing just last week? I shall provide the answer shortly, unless I forget, in which case I won't. Questions about the royal family, the peril, the level of jeopardy in which they currently find themselves, but also, because you know how my brain works by now, the broader question of why we still do it. Why in an increasingly secular society where we are constantly telling each other that we believe in meritocracy, we believe in egalitarianism, we believe in equality. We've eschewed and shrugged off so many of the institutional straitjackets of old, most obviously, I suppose, the church. Why are we still a country that bends the knee for people who are nothing but beneficiaries of accidents of birth? It's a funny one. Part of it, my favourite answer so far, will be our complete ignorance of our own history. The fact that we have been somehow inculcated to believe that things have to be like this, and indeed that they should. But there's plenty of room for more answers on that. Ivor is in Crystal Palace. Ivor, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, hi, James. I think we've talked before about this, but my sort of interest in this is more from the Commonwealth perspective, the broader global perspective. I'm originally from New Zealand, but I'm a sort of a half Kiwi, half Brit. So I'm sort of inside the tent and out of it all at the same time. And I've also sort of worked across a lot of Commonwealth networks in my career as well. And I think here in Britain we've got quite a blind spot when it comes to understanding what the Commonwealth is. And I think
that's for sure. That's absolutely true.
We do. And you know, stories like this will often say, "Oh, what's the Commonwealth view? What does the Commonwealth think?" And it's like, well, for a start, the Commonwealth is a network of 56 countries that spans from, you know, the Caribbean to the South Pacific. And I think what a lot of Brits don't appreciate is, firstly, just how diverse a network that is, geographically, culturally, politically, et cetera, but also the fact that only 15 of those countries or nations or realms actually have the British monarch as the head of state. So 41 out of 56 are all various different forms of republics. So India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, South Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Zimbabwe. These are republics that we're talking about, and they've been republics since they got independence in the middle of the last century. So it's only basically Australia, New Zealand, Canada, a handful of Caribbean countries and a couple of South Pacific countries that still have the British monarch as the head of state.
I mean, the question, and I read it out earlier, as I think you heard, it speaks to quite a colonial mindset. Now that you've put it like this, because what we're sitting here thinking as Brits, without the benefit of your duality, if you like, is that we're thinking, well, there's us, the full fat Brits, and then there's the Commonwealth, and they're all interchangeable and homogenous, and they're just the sort of semi-skimmed Brits,
yeah,
or the semi-skim. And of course, you're absolutely right. That's a ridiculous position to adopt, but it speaks to perhaps the same sentiments and sensibilities that explain our continuing deference to the monarchy.
Yeah, and in many ways, you know, I sometimes say there's actually several Commonwealths.
Yeah.
There's not just one. I mean, we talked about this in the Brexit debate before about how geography matters. You know, former British colonies in southern Africa having a conversation about shared interests and opportunities to collaborate is a very, very different conversation to Caribbean countries or, you know, Aussies and Kiwis talking about what they have in common. And yet we lump them all into the Commonwealth. And they are, to be fair, they are part of what is called the Commonwealth. But it's a very sort of, to, not wanting to quote a Paul Simon line, but a very loose affiliation of
You could do worse. You could quote Nadine Dorries.
I couldn't possibly quote James. But it's a very loose affiliation of very diverse countries.
Oh, we're all going to have completely different, really. Even if you could generalise about a national attitude, they're all going to have completely different relationships with the monarchy, whether the monarch is the head of state or not. Well, just while I've got you, what's the... Because I follow Australian republicanism quite closely, and oddly enough, I'm quite good mates with a bloke that used to run the republican movement in Australia. A lovely bloke, used to play rugby. What's the New Zealand position at this point in history?
New Zealand is a little bit more complicated. Yeah. You probably know the Aussies had a referendum in 99 and said no for various complicated reasons, which we could have a whole different conversation about that. New Zealand's a bit more complicated, partly because what we have in New Zealand that the Aussies don't have is a founding treaty with the indigenous people of New Zealand, the Māori, which was signed with the Crown. And so getting rid of the Crown constitutionally is a much more complicated process. And actually, Māori today, modern Māori, actually have mixed feelings about the Republican movement because from their perspective, they would only want to get rid of the Crown if the outstanding and unresolved issues that are still coming out of the founding treaty that we signed in 1840 are resolved, and a lot of those are still being contested and fought over. So, sorting out what the Crown would be replaced by legally and where that would leave Maori people is actually a really complicated question, and that's actually why politically the debate in New Zealand is a bit more complex and nuanced. That said, I would say, you know, most Kiwis, and I'm a white, you know, white [S2] Sure. [S1] of European descent, most Kiwis do have, I would say, psychologically and emotionally, probably a slightly closer relationship with the monarchy than most Aussies do.
Okay.
It feels like it's a closer relationship. But, you know, I think if the Aussies were to reopen the Republican debate, and if they were to choose to become a republic, that would have a massive knock-on effect in New Zealand as well. I would be very surprised if New Zealand didn't follow suit quite shortly after. But I still think that there's a long way to play in that game because it's still a fraught question. But I just think coming back to the UK angle, I do think that, you know, the other half of me that's British, I sort of, you know, looking out at the rest of the world, I don't think we should assume that when we talk about the Commonwealth, we're talking about one big homogenous block.
No, you're right, you know, and I'm guilty as charged.
No, I'm not saying you are, James.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. Well, I'm not really. I mean, I was earlier because I read out someone else's question without qualifying the point that you make. But something that occurred to me while you were talking is that a lot of the Brexit liars who claimed that they wanted to get rid of all the Eastern Europeans and that we would replace them with people from the Commonwealth, they're the same people who are now talking about deporting all the people who have come here from Commonwealth countries to work because they're not British.
And again, this is where there's a bit of a Venn diagram with race, right? Because a lot of people think Commonwealth. They think, oh, Aussies and Kiwis and Canadians, i.e., whites.
Yeah.
The other idea of Commonwealth is you know, people that look and sound very, very different.
Yes.
You know? So I think Commonwealth can often be a moniker for.
Well, do you know, actually, the world's wrongest man, Daniel Hannan, gave the game away a little bit when he started, during Brexit, started talking about the Anglosphere.
Well, I mean, and that's...
I think we all know what that means.
Yeah, and also, again, coming back to the geography of the geographies of Brexit and why geography matters, the Anglosphere is basically Australia, New Zealand and Canada and Britain, you know, with maybe a little bit of white South Africa in it. If, for all intents and purposes, that's what they're effectively talking about. But as a cohesive geographical network, it just makes no sense, you know?
No, you're right. And yes, and it's, I mean, important thing to bear in mind when having any of these conversations. There will be a, you know, countless conversations that are separate and distinct about the future of the monarchy, about the role of the monarchy, to lump the Commonwealth in, despite, of course, the fact that the monarch isn't even the head of state in the majority, the plurality of member states, is absurd. But then every other aspect of the conversation about the monarchy is arguably absurd. So, well, great, cool, thank you, Ivor. I feel edified. I feel edified and educated. I apologise for bringing the world's wrongest man into such an erudite conversation. But Daniel Hannan, of course, was on the programme earlier in the week when he featured in Unhinged Headlines. Can anyone remember how unhinged that headline was? I've got two more for you after this, neither of which feature the world's wrongest man, Daniel Hannan, but one of which features the patron saint of unhinged headlines. And it is, forgive me for using a word that never sounds entirely right when it falls from my cherry lips, it is a doozy.
Coming up at one on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
At a critical moment, praise for the House of Windsor from Virginia Giuffre's family. A different story for the House of York. What now for Sarah, Beatrice and Eugenie? And all eyes on Iran.
Sheila Fogarty at one. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbor's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-canceling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:49. I'll do the multiple choice answer now while I remember. The question was, did Nigel Farage last week have dinner at the Ritz with George Osborne, the former Chancellor to whom Honest Bob Jenrick has inexplicably been sending his speeches, begging for approval? Did he B, attend the launch of a book entitled How to Launder Money, written by a convicted criminal and held at the equally plush hotel Raffles? Or did he C, have afternoon tea with Boris Johnson at Claridge's? What was your guess? Keith guessed C. And the correct answer, I don't know whether or not you consider this to be par for the course or not, but the correct answer is B. Nigel Farage attended the launch of a book called How to Launder Money, written by somebody called George Cottrell, who is or certainly has been a close advisor to and confidant of Nigel Farage. Another, of course, close confidant of Nigel Farage, Nathan Gill, is currently in jail for taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge. But Cottrell himself has been jailed, so several months in a US prison after being convicted there in 2017 for wire fraud. And it was two raffles that Farage made his way last week to celebrate the launch of a book by Cottrell entitled How to Launder Money. So a lucky escape for both George Osborne and Boris Johnson. Time now for what is widely regarded as the best feature in the history of this programme.
Unhinged Headline.
This is quite a good one. It's by Alistair Heath, the maddest man in Madland when it comes to journalism. And it originally appeared under the headline, Vast For... Actually, do it again, Keith.
Unhinged Headline.
Vast forces are mobilising to stop Britain's only real chance of survival. Okay. And it went on to tell us, Britain is not merely broken, it has been hacked to pieces by a nihilistic ruling class committed to dismembering our society. That was the second paragraph. The third paragraph reads, the methodical ruthlessness of the left-wing barbarians responsible for the relentlessness of their vandalism, the thoroughness of their infiltration of our institutions is such that it will take at least 8 days. So Labour have been in power for 18 months. This clown was in favour of Liz Truss, in favour of Boris Johnson, in favour of Brexit and in favour of austerity. But the country is currently teetering upon the brink of oblivion because of the left-wing barbarians. So it originally appeared under that headline, Vast forces are mobilising to stop Britain's only real chance of survival. How mad is that headline on a scale of 1 to 10? It's about a 7. Right? We've had madder headlines than that. We've had more unhinged headlines than that. So what happened at the Daily Telegraph yesterday? Somebody phoned down to the comment desk and said, that headline is really unhinged. O'Brien's going to be taking the mickey out of us again if we leave this headline up. Can we tone it down a bit? And they said, yeah, certainly, boss. So they put a new headline on the article for when it was online, or when it was, if you press print on the online version, a different headline comes up. This is the one they came up with because the original one was too unhinged. The plot to topple Britain's next right-wing government has already begun. So people at the Daily Telegraph, and this fella is the editor of the Sunday Telegraph, are getting paid to write fantasy fiction about plots in place to topple governments that haven't been elected yet. And the headline, The Plot to Topple Britain's Next Right-Wing Government Has Already Begun, was adjudged to be less unhinged than Vast forces are mobilising to stop Britain's only real chance of survival. And although we have fun with this stuff, I was with some of my former Fleet Street colleagues earlier in the week, and they all pointed out to me that although we find it hilarious and unhinged, the mailbags at Telegraph Towers are full of people going, yes, absolutely, marvellous. So it's funny and not funny at the same time, because if you want to understand why this country keeps smashing itself over the head with a rusty old frying pan, you have to understand the journalism being conducted by the people encouraging us to do so, which brings me to my second
Unhinged Headline.
This is by David Frost, one of the key consiglieres of Boris Johnson, and therefore a man who was part of the administration that has done more harm to this country than pretty much anything since the Luftwaffe. And David Frost has written, Starmer doesn't care enough to defend Britain. I don't know where you start with this level of unhingedness, but David Frost, of course, is the bloke that Boris Johnson put in the House of Lords for presiding over the Brexit deal with the European Union that they were seeking to disown and criticise before the ink had even dried. And now he's accusing Keir Starmer of not caring enough to defend Britain. Again, unhinged and or hilarious, but the Daily Telegraph mailbags will be full of people who actually swallow this bilge wholesale. And they don't come much bilgier than David Frost.
Unhinged headline.
And finally, poor old Josephine Stroud is on hold. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to him because I need to play you a little bit of this week's Full Disclosure with the comedian Arthur Smith, who you will know, and playwright you will know. If you don't recognise the name immediately, you'll certainly recognise the gravelly tones in a moment. Grumpy Old Men being a particular moment in his career, but he is a stand-up and a writer, a playwright and a poet, whose career has spanned decades. He also, and this is one of those moments that makes it sound as if the programme is actually planned in advance. Have you worked out from my comments earlier in the show what I did last night? Well, if you haven't, then this will fall on deaf ears. But Arthur is also the man responsible for the play. He co-wrote it with Chris England, known as An Evening with Gary Lineker. And what did I do last night? Well, I only spent an evening with Gary. What an amazing coincidence. Here is a little taste of this week's Full Disclosure with the inimitable Arthur Smith. Had you discovered, I mean, hiding under caravans, having brothers, had you discovered a pleasure in making people laugh at this point?
Oh, yes.
From as long as...
Yeah. I mean, I remember a particular incident when I must have been about 8 or 9 or something, and we had a Canadian teacher, I remember, at my primary school, Southwark Park Primary School, and she announced we were going to do a version of Peter Pan in front of the school and the parents. And I was very excited about that. And I remember I went home and actually wrote my version of Peter Pan, which obviously was unperformable. But Miss Marshall, the teacher, said, well, you can play any part you want.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll be Captain Hook. Okay. You know, yeah, you wouldn't want to be Peter Pan. Yeah, that'd be boring.
Yeah.
So obviously my mum got me a coat hanger and whatnot. And I remember I was determined to frighten everybody when I came on as Captain Hook. And I came on being furious and looking at, and they all just started laughing. And however hard I tried to frighten them, they all laughed louder. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, I quite like this sound of laughter. Maybe I'll go for that a bit more.
Indeedy. And that is one reason to listen to not just this week's Full Disclosure, but also the full range of interviews that have been conducted. And last night's interview with Gary Lineker will be appearing imminently on the Full Disclosure roster. That is almost it from me for another week. And what a strange week it has been. Yesterday was one of the strangest shows we've ever done together, wasn't it? Well, I say we. It was only me. It's the first phone-in I think I've ever presented that involved no phone-ins whatsoever. But thank you for holding my hand as we made our way through it, and thank you in advance for continuing to do so. Of course, we had loads of guests as well, I know, and they were brilliant, and they were booked by my superb colleagues, and Andy Hughes was knocking it out of the park. But it was still technically a phone-in show with no phone-in. I hope we don't have to do that again anytime soon. If you miss any of it, either today's or yesterday's or, I don't know, a week last Friday's, you can listen back on Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. And I don't know where my voice is doing that thing where it goes up at the end like an Australian. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Guess what I'm doing now?
You mean when you leave?
Yeah.
Game of tennis.
No, I'm trying a new chippy.
Oh, that's good.
There's a new chippy up the road, and I've had my eye on it for a while, and today's the day.
Yeah.
I'll report back on Monday. What is the only fizzy drink you can have with fish and chips?
Oh, Fanta Orange?
Close.
No. I wouldn't drink it if you paid me, but...
Would you not? Vimto.
I'm not a fizzy drinker.
Vimto.
Oh, is it Vimto?
Vimto all day long. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Sorbitt, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, the King probably, possibly, allowed himself a little sigh of relief at the warm words last night from Sky Roberts, Virginia Giuffre's brother, who commended King Charles for his stance on Andrew yesterday. Make no mistake, though, and the King knows this, and the people around him know this, the royal family are not out of the woods yet, reputationally, and in terms of managing what they do next. And what now for Sarah Ferguson and her daughters, Beatrice and Eugenie, Princesses Beatrice and Eugenie, whose father, Andrew, was arrested yesterday. We'll hear from the author, Andrew Loney, at 2. He's written a book called Entitled, about the four of them. But I want to start with the royal family and where you're up to with them. I'll tell you where I'm up to. You tell me where you're up to.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Detectives are continuing their search at the former home of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor in Berkshire after he was released under investigation. Unmarked police vans have been seen entering Royal Lodge after the former prince was detained yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. US politicians say the arrest reinforces their case to have him answer their questions about Jeffrey Epstein. The former prince is mentioned multiple times in files relating to the late paedophile. Congressman Suhas Subramanian has called for the former prince to testify in America.
No one's been arrested and been held accountable the way he's being held accountable. And I think it shows that this investigation is fruitful and yielding some results. But if he wants to clear his name, then he'll still come and cooperate with us.
Andrew has previously denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Epstein. He's not responded to LBC's requests for comment on the specific allegations connected to the release of the latest Epstein files in January. A lobbying company co-founded by Peter Mandelson has collapsed into administration. Administrators at London-based Global Council say the peer's historical links with Epstein is behind a number of high-profile customers leaving the firm. Lord Mandelson has denied wrongdoing in his dealings with the disgraced financier. UK Athletics has pleaded guilty to the corporate manslaughter of a Paralympian who died during a training session in East London. UAE shot putter Abdullah Hayaye died when part of a metal cage fell on him during training at Newham Leisure Centre in 2017. A man's been sentenced to more than 23 years for murdering his ex-wife in Cardiff. 37-year-old Tiraza Waragulaji stabbed Nirodha Nirwunhela, who was 32, in August last year. The British co-founder of the fashion retailer ASOS has died in Thailand. Police say they believe Quentin Griffiths fell from a balcony in the city of Pattaya. There's no evidence of foul play. And a team of specially trained drone operators will take to the skies to try to tackle fly tipping. They'll use lasers to create a detailed map of illegal waste sites across England for the Environment Agency. It's hoped the information collected can be used as evidence in court. Dan Cook from the Chartered Institution of Waste Management welcomes the announcement.
We are aware of more than 11 what are called super sites where dumping is happening at this sort of scale. So any new resources has to be welcome. So fair play to the agency for bringing in extra measures.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 52 points at 10.679. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a dry but cloudy end to the day for most of us. Bright spells and showers developing in places, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
JP Morgan Personal Investing gives you the clarity to make more informed decisions on your investments, which is great because right now something else just became crystal clear. Your kid just outgrew the kids menu. Now he's ordering a truffle gnocchi. You consider making a don't gnocchi it till you try it joke, but now's not the time. Now's the time to grow his world, one bite at a time. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon. If you're just joining us here at LBC, we are continuing to talk about the fallout from the whole storm, really, that's been around Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, not just since yesterday, but especially since that arrest yesterday. I'm sure many of you, if not all of you listening, will have seen the photograph of him being released pending further investigations after a day of questioning with the police in Norfolk. The searches continue. Police search Royal Lodge for a second day after the release of Andrew under investigation. He was arrested, as you know, on suspicion of misconduct in public office, but was pictured late last night returning to the Sandringham estate where he now lives. Going to talk a bit later in the programme about the House of York, as it's called. I mean, they don't go by any of the titles anymore, but his two daughters still use Princess, still use HRH, still have active roles at some level in the royal family. So we'll talk about the House of York after two, but I start firmly with the House of Windsor. And I was really struck last night by the words of Sky Roberts, Virginia Giuffre's brother, his comments in light of yesterday's events. Let me read something of what he said. And the reason I'm focusing in on it is I imagine that the king and the king's household were rather relieved to hear it. He says, this is the brother of Virginia Giuffre, he said, "I commend the king. I say thank you to the king and to the royal family for standing behind survivors, standing behind their people, assume me, their people, to say it doesn't matter your wealth or power. There isn't a different set of laws for you compared to other people. I think we're seeing that in the UK right now." Now, I'd be pleased if I were them to hear that from him, particularly from him, from Sky Roberts. But they must know, surely, that they are far from out of the woods yet. What do you say at this point is the future of the monarchy? What must they now choose to survive? Will they survive? I think they will. If they do certain things right now and speed up the pace of change that they talk about so much, particularly William talks about so much. But what is the future of the monarchy? Will they survive? Lewis Goodall is here to talk about this more with me, presenter of Sundays with Lewis Goodall, co-host of Global's podcast, The News Agents. I don't know whether those comments struck you in the way they did me, Lewis, but if I were the king, I'd have heard them with great relief while still understanding there was a long, long way to go.
There was a long way to go, Sheila. And as we were saying yesterday, I think the what really is very striking and what must really, really strike fear into the hearts of the palace, and which that astounding, extraordinary, remarkable, ghostly photograph of Andrew in that car really kind of brought home yesterday, was the extent to which this story is no longer in the control of, insofar as it ever was, anyone in the palace, anyone in 10 Downing Street, and certainly not in the hands of Andrew himself. I am struck by the extent to which, I think you've called it exactly right, I think the monarchy can survive, in answer to your question. Whether it should survive is a separate question, but it can survive. But I think that what it must do in order to survive is break out of the culture of deference, which I don't think has actually served it terribly well up to now. I've been very struck, I have to say, in the last 24 hours, the extent to which we're still getting some of these briefings, on-background briefings from the palace, saying as far as the king is concerned and the queen is concerned, it's business as usual. And that has been regurgitated by a certain fawning type of royal commentator and royal journalist. I have to say I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised that the palace would want to send out a message saying business as usual. This isn't business as usual. This can't be business as usual. It shouldn't be business as usual. We've got a senior member of the royal family having been arrested, having had his title stripped from him, the palace never explaining why. We've got a situation where there are accusations, and it is just accusations, that the palace at various times, or parts of the palace anyway, have mounted a briefing operation against one of Andrew's accusers. That is, of course, separate to the allegations which are being investigated or that he's been arrested for. There are serious questions for the palace. This shouldn't be business as usual. It can't be.
And the whole question of what the institution itself knew, and I say the institution because clearly the king or the monarch of the moment is the head of it, the visual head of it for all of us and the real head of it. But there is an institution around that of other people and of traditions and of practices and culture. So if the police spotlight turns on what the institution knew, both about the Epstein sex related allegations and indeed the trade stuff as well. Who knows what they're finding in these investigations? We may find out, we may not find out, depending on how the whole thing proceeds. But if that spotlight becomes any brighter, they can't ignore that either, can they? Absolutely not. Particularly when they've said they will absolutely, wholeheartedly support